there. This is Travis from AGP Video. We are recording and broadcasting.
Thank you. And City Clerk Mattson, are you ready to go?
I am ready.
All right, everyone. Thank you very much. Welcome to the City Council meeting for Tuesday, March 9th. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember George. Councilmember Storton.
Here.
Councilmember Barnage.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
Here.
Mayor Ray Wrexham.
Here. Would you please silently join me in a moment of reflection? Thank you. Tonight, Councilmember Barnage will be leading us in the flag salute.
Thank you, Mayor. If everyone would please join me in the flag salute. Sorry, I just have to stand up. It's a thing. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. For agenda review, let's see if there's anyone who would like to reorder any items this evening. Okay, then we will proceed as published. Item 5A is closed session announcements. We have none tonight. I will move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
I'll second. Mayor Pro Tem.
Any discussion? City Clerk Mattson, can we get a roll call, please?
I apologize. I have to unmute myself. Can I get who seconded that motion? My earpiece fell out. Sorry about that. Okay, thank you. All right. Mayor Ray Wrexham?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember George? Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Thank you. Item 6 is our special presentations. We just have two regular ones tonight. The first one is our update regarding countywide COVID-19 efforts, and I'll turn it over to City Manager McDonald.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. As I lead into this brief update, I just wanted to mention Councilmember George asked me to let everybody know that she's not here this evening because her family experienced a death in the family earlier today, so she sends her deepest apologies, and we of course also send our deepest condolences to her entire family. So she wanted me to let everybody know what was going on there. Jumping into COVID, a few items to touch on tonight. One, wanted to just remind folks that our local vaccine clinic that was located at the Rio Grande High School has officially moved and reopened at the regional center. It is located at 800 West Branch Street in Arroyo Grande, and so for anybody looking to receive their vaccines through that clinic, it is moved there largely, or not largely, but because schools are going to be reopening or planning to reopen, which is all a good thing. Second item to note for vaccines as well, wanted to just reiterate that the county has moved to a lottery system for appointments, so folks no longer need to jump on Thursdays at 9 a.m. and obsessively and repeatedly have to refresh their page or try to get in line. This way, people just need to submit their name and information to the county, and they'll be conducting a lottery and contacting folks when they've been selected so that they can make their appointments. So anybody who is eligible for a vaccine, who wants a vaccine, should sign up for that lottery system, and that way they'll be able to get in as soon as possible through the county. Also on vaccines, just wanted to mention there are a few pharmacies that are now able to administer vaccines as well. Those are listed on the county's website. A lot of good information there. So again, readyslow.org. Just go to the vaccine area. They'll be able to get you to the right place. So the Vons and Grover Beach, the CVS and AG in San Luis Obispo, those are provide vaccines. I know it's difficult to get appointments, but they are there, and they are administering them. In our county, Rite Aid, Rouse, and the Cayucas Pharmacy are also some of our local pharmacies that are administering vaccines. also wanted to touch on the CDC's recommendations that they issued very recently for folks who have been fully vaccinated. And so this is trying to give people a greater sense of what you can and can't do once you've become vaccinated. It's fairly helpful, I think, to give people an idea of best practices going forward. So just wanted to hit a few highlights. One is they're recommending that fully vaccinated people should wear a mask and stay 6 feet apart from people, just like we've been practicing for the past year now. However, fully vaccinated people can gather indoors with other fully vaccinated people without wearing a mask. They're recommending that they may also gather indoors with unvaccinated people from one other household without masks, unless they or anyone they live with has an increased risk for severe COVID-19 illness. And finally, fully vaccinated people can refrain from quarantine and testing following a known exposure as long as they are asymptomatic. And I believe the definition of fully vaccinated means if you've received the two-dose variety as opposed to the Johnson & Johnson variety, which is now available locally as well, you've gotten both of your doses, and I believe they're saying it takes about two weeks for the vaccine to be fully effective at that point. So once you've passed all those hurdles, these are some guidelines that people can follow. It gives you an idea of what people who have been vaccinated can do, what the CDC is recommending they can do. And then finally, I wanted to highlight that the state has been issuing new rounds of grant funding for small businesses related to COVID relief. I know we're going to be talking about COVID relief from our city later in the agenda, but I also wanted to let everybody know that the state is now issuing a new round of relief. Information can be found at carelieffgrant.com. That's carelieffgrant.com. There's information there about new funding rounds. It looks like the current round is trying to provide funding for folks who have applied in the past but were not chosen. It was a competitive process, so that new grant round is beginning this week. It's closed and only available to eligible applicants who were waitlisted in rounds 1 and 2, so this is now round 3 for new tranches of funding. The next round will be open to nonprofit cultural institutions, so that's a new and different approach and a new funding source for those types of organizations. And then finally, round 5, that will begin March 25th, that will reopen to new applicants. So if anybody is looking for additional funding, the grants range from $5,000 to $25,000. So I just wanted to let everybody know to take a look at that website and see what's available. So that's it for me related to COVID.
Thank you. I only had one thing to add, and it's exciting because I don't think people really know, and that is the Rite Aid in Arroyo Grande at the corner of Elm and Grand also has a vaccine available. Their website is quite difficult, but you can walk in. You are eligible, you can walk in. I am a teacher, so I'm eligible. I walked in, I was in and out in 10 minutes, and I can't tell you the relief that I feel in going to the post office and going to the grocery store right now. So I don't know if they're still doing walk-ins. I believe that they are. You can always just pop in. But if you are eligible, that's one of the spots you can get them, and they had plenty on hand this week. And like I said, it might be because they know their website's difficult, but that's an added one that's not being added. So Aurora Grande, get out there and get vaccinated if you're eligible. Let's check in with the council and see if we have any questions. Councilmember Storton, any questions?
I have nothing. Thank you.
Councilmember Barnage?
Just one question. Whitney, so we know it's 2 weeks after the first vaccine that you have a little bit of immunity. So it's also second vaccine, correct?
That's right, in terms of when that CDC guidance kind of kicks in, right?
Okay, thank you for that.
That's correct for the two-dose vaccine. For the one-dose vaccine, it's 2 weeks after the one dose. And Councilmember Paulding, Mayor Pro Tem Paulding, any questions?
No questions, thank you, Mayor.
Okay, so let's go ahead and open up public comment, and let's check in with the AGP.
If anyone would like to make a comment, please raise your hand. We have one comment from Jamie Sanbonmatsu. Jamie, you are allowed to speak. Please unmute your mic.
Good evening. Thank you, Mayor Russom and council members for allowing the public comment. I know my name's a familiar one, and I'm here for the We Are the Care initiative.
Jamie, can I hold you back until item 7?
Yes.
Okay. This one's on the COVID matter. So we'll start your time over again, and we'll wait until everybody's ready to hear from you, okay?
I thought I was paying such close attention. Excuse me.
It's okay. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I hate to do that.
Madam Mayor, that was the only speaker.
Okay. Then I will close public comment on item 6A, and that is a receive and file. So I will turn it over to the city manager for item 6B, which is the city manager's report.
Thank you. Moving into this report, I have a flyer I'd like to share with everybody to make an announcement about a program, some programs that our Recreation Department is getting up and running as we head into Easter time. So just wanted to share with everyone both a Bunny Graham program that our Recreation Department is starting up soon. So purchase a Bunny Graham, and our Rio Grande Bunny will personally deliver baskets of treats to any address in the Five Cities area. So check it out and see if you'd like to make one of these deliveries to somebody. And the other item is we will be doing a virtual egg hunt, similar, I think, to what we did last year as well. So visit our Rio Grande Facebook or Instagram pages, and there you will see daily clues for where you can go find your eggs and solve certain challenges for the day. There will be some prizes, and if you take a photo and provide your answer, and so more fun activities being planned for later this month and into spring. So just wanted to share this work that our Recreation Department's bringing forward, and then wanted to kick it over to Bill Robeson, our Assistant City Manager and Public Works Director, to talk a little bit about Ridge Street Bridge and our reopening plans that are coming up.
Good evening, Mayor Ray Russom and Council Members. Bill Robeson, your Assistant City Manager and Public Works Director. We've been getting quite a few calls about the grant reopening and the grand reopening and ribbon cutting of our Bridge Street Bridge project. So I wanted to kind of touch on a few points for your council. I'm sure you've been getting quite a few calls as well, but I'd like to just let the public know about a few informational points. But we're really excited about the completion of this project for our city, and especially the reopening for vehicular and pedestrian traffic. And again, we wanted to give you some main points for this virtual ceremony. We're not promoting this to the public like we normally would, and we would really love to do that, but due to the restrictions for outdoor gatherings for Tier 2, the red tier which we're in, it's just not possible. We're discouraging physical attendance by the general public due to the COVID-19 guidelines, and we are encouraging the public to watch virtually, either live on Facebook, so we're going to have a live stream, or through a video link that will be posted on the city's website after the ceremony, so you can watch later in the day. It's been set up on the city's Facebook page for the ribbon cutting, again, which will take place on Friday, this coming Friday, at 3 p.m., and there's also a city spotlight on the webpage that's stating all of the links and everything you need to know to watch live or watch afterwards. And then we're going to be following up with a press release with photos and of the ceremony and much more information after the ceremony. So we just wanted to give that information out to the public and to your council, and I can answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Let's check in with the council. And Councilmember Barnage, any questions? Councilmember Storton? Mayor Pro Tem Paulding? And I'll just add it. Wait, I forgot. forgot what I was going to add in. Oh, well, it's not important. So let's go ahead and, again, go to the public. Again, this is item 6B. So if the public has any questions on the city manager's report, let's check in with them.
If anyone would like to make a comment, please raise your hand now. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
All right, thank you so much. Again, item 6B is a receive and file, so we will move on to item 7, and let's just go ahead and put Ms. Sanbonmatsu at the front of the line for public comment for item 7.
Thank you for your indulgence and understanding. You'd think I'd know this after a year. Every year during the month of March, we celebrate National Women's History Month to honor the contributions women have made to society throughout time and strides that have been made for gender equality. Unfortunately, the child care crisis and COVID-19 pandemic have undone much of the progress made over the years in what is now being called the female recession. For the first time since the 1970s, there has been a decline in women's presence in the labor force. Yet even a 5% drop threatens to undo 25 years of progress. The recession is due to income inequality that persists to this day between men and women. The strains of the pandemic has placed on families. Men are still more typically the breadwinners. When a choice needs to be made, who will sacrifice their career to either stay home with the children due to lack of child care or work from home, mothers are more likely to step out of their jobs to support their family's current needs. Attempting to work from home while trying to care for young children or older children who are for distance learning is nearly impossible. The resulting career loss can be devastating. Even before 2020, the child care crisis was already impacting working mothers due to the limited access to quality and affordable care, but COVID has now forced at least 2,500 licensed centers to permanently shut their doors in California alone, creating even more of a dire situation. Not having access to child care has put a mental and emotional strain on these mothers who must now try to save their career, care for their children, and continue to support their family and household. While it seems that women leaving the workforce in droves would only affect those who are part of the fallout, the ripple effect will be seen in our economy and will have lasting negative effects on our society. This is why we need to continue to support child care in our community, and we need to value the contributions women make to the workforce. We of the CARE ask that this council takes in its decisions for the city of Arroyo Grande, it keeps the child care sector and gender equity in mind. In doing so, you can help alleviate the women's recession and support the hardworking women in our community. For any ways you'd like to get involved, We Are the CARE can be contacted through First Five of San Luis Obispo County. And I personally, as a resident, would like to thank this council for what they do in Arroyo Grande, because I see what you do for it, and I know that the support is there. So thank you for that and your time.
If anyone else would like to make a comment, please use the raise hand button. Madam Mayor, there are no more raised hands.
Thank you very much. And I also want to acknowledge what the previous speaker said. In December, I saw a statistic that showed when you do the net jobs gained and lost, the jobs lost were all female in December. So that is not a small thing, and we're doing our part, and I'm really happy we're going to have this COVID relief discussion later tonight, because in the last round, we did support a couple of home child care centers as part of our relief package before, so we'll see who comes in again this time around. So excited if we do go forward with a program like that. So that I'll close public comment and move on to item 8. This is our consent agenda, and tonight we have items 8A through 8F. And let me check in with the council to see if anyone would like to ask a question on one of these items or pull it for separate consideration. Councilmember Storton?
I do not, thank you.
Councilmember Barnage?
No, thank you, Mayor.
And Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
No, thank you.
All right, so let's go ahead and open up public comment and see if anyone has any questions or discussion about items 8A through 8F.
If you would like to make a comment, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. So I will close public comment at this time and bring this back around to the council for consideration and possible motion.
Madam Mayor, this is Councilmember Barnett, and I would move for approval of items 8A through 8F.
And Councilmember Storton will second.
Any discussion? Okay, City Clerk Mattson, can we get a roll call, please?
Okay, Councilmember George is absent. Councilmember Barnett?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Paldi?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Bressam?
Yes. Item 9 today, 9 is our public hearings, and tonight we have item 9A. This is consideration of community development block grant projects, otherwise known as CDBG grants, for the year 2021. And I will turn this over to our, oh, it feels so good to say this, Community Development Director, Mr. Fitzroy.
Good evening, and again, very, very happy to be here, and thanks for the warm welcome. Tonight we'll be discussing the Community Development Block Grant, and so I'm going to go ahead and pull up my presentation and kick things off. See that okay? All right. So just by way of background, CDBG, or Community Development Block Grant, is a federal program that distributes funds to participating cities and counties across the state. And allocation of the funds can be made for a variety of projects as long as it meets certain criteria. Generally speaking, those three criteria are that they benefit low and moderate income persons, they aid in the prevention or elimination of slums or blight, and or they address an urgent community development need that poses some risk to public health, safety, or welfare. So as far as the 2021 grant funding cycle, generally speaking, the County of San Luis Obispo administers the overall program. They're somewhat of a pass-through agency, which is agreed upon through our signed cooperation agreement, where they distribute funds to the county, but as well as the all participating cities within the county. And this year, the county has estimated that the city will receive approximately $89,976 in CDBG funds. It's a little more than last year, about a 3% increase. So generally speaking, these funds are divided into six categories: public services, which generally speaking is funds that can be used to provide or support some program in the community, such as a nonprofit that provides a service to the community. Public facilities, which is generally speaking a tangible physical project. Economic development, some sort of regional or area benefit. Housing rehabilitation, and general administration of the overall program. So some of the requirements of CDBG, just to touch on them very briefly, generally no less than 70% of the allotment can be used for projects or programs that clearly and directly benefit low-income persons. There is a 30% cap for projects that eliminate blight, and there's also, and this is important because there's a little bit of discussion about this, there's a 15% cap for public services. So again, public services being funding that goes to organizations that provide some benefit or service to the community. The CDBG projects, so tangible projects, they must be completed in a timely manner, and when applicable, they must comply with all federal environmental regulations such as NEPA, labor laws, and other procurement regulations. So this is the second round of, or second time that this item has been to the council. Generally speaking, we take them twice for preliminary direction and input, and then this a final round and a final decision. And tonight is the final, or the second time that this has gone for 2021 funding. And this item was preliminary. The preliminary direction was in back in December 8, 2020. And generally, the council decided to, for CDBG funds, decided to allocate fundings for the Akita Field improvements as well as improvements at City Hall. And I'll dig into those a little bit more here. In terms of public services, and based on prior direction from the council, it's been the preference of the city that funding for public services come from the community service grant program that the city offers, rather than CDBG funds. And the reason being is that because CDBG funds limit to 15%, that number overall then usually is quite small, and so it's when you have a small number, but you still have to comply with what are somewhat cumbersome regulations from the CDBG overall grant funding program, it was determined that the local nonprofits would be better served through the city's grant program because it's more efficient, it can get funds out to the community faster than it would be under CDBG. And then with those funds that would be available, allocating those to projects so that there's more funding available to actually see tangible projects happen. So the city did receive, though, two public service-related applications, one from Five Cities Homeless Coalition and the other from CASA. And staff has coordinated with these organizations to make sure that they are aware of the general direction and make them aware of the community service grant program, which will be coming to the city council shortly in an upcoming year. So just to highlight again that preliminary direction, it was allocated approximately $31,000 was allocated to the burial removal project at Akita Field, $40,000 to City Hall, the front entrance, $11,000 will go to administration, and then about $6,000 will go to city planning and capacity building, and this will all generally go towards the ADA transition plan, all of which we'll talk a little bit more about. So in terms of the Akita Field and the improvements and the funding that will be there, one of the highest priorities to the city is to improve compliance with the American with Disabilities Act, also known as ADA. This effort also addresses the objective of enhancing accessibility for individuals with disabilities on city-owned property. And generally, the sports complex is a regional access, so if we can provide and enhance accessibility there, it's not just to people in the city, but it's for everyone who utilizes and benefits from the resources and assets at the complex. So just a brief update on where things are. It is on track for construction for spring in 2021, though at this point with COVID, it may cause some delays, but at this point that's what the target is. Funds up to this point that we have utilized and allocated previously, funds so far have been used for design and survey, and it's intended that the staff will be working to bring final plans to council for approval in the coming months. Now, in terms of the City Hall enhancements and improvements in the barrier removal project, it was proposed that $40,000 of CDBG funds be allocated to that, and the idea is that it would the project would install an accessible entrance to City Hall, including exterior doors with automatic door openers that can be easily accessed by citizens with mobility limitations. So moving on in terms of planning and capacity building, like I had mentioned, some of the funds generally have to go towards the administration, so the staff time that it takes to administer these funds. But a portion of that would be is proposed to be allocated to capacity building. And what the idea there is, it would be the preparation of an ADA transition plan for the city. So under Title II of ADA, the city is required to do a self-evaluation and transition plan, whereby all city-owned properties, there's either a plan in place or they have already made improvements to ensure that the city facilities and properties are in compliance with the ADA. And so it's estimated that this plan, the transition plan, would be approximately $88,000. So contributing that roughly a $6,000 amount, it would help to lower that cost to about $80,000 at this point. So this is just more of an informational item. One of the other funding categories is housing, and this was just to make the public as well as the council aware that the Salvation Army has applied for approximately $300,000 directly to the county in their CDBG fund allocations for permanent supportive housing. And the reason this applies to the city is that they have specific properties haven't been identified, but they have been, Salvation Army has expressed interest in finding something within the city of Arroyo Grande. So we'll continue to work with them, but this is, again, is more of just an informational item. So funding recommendations for this, if any, as there are updates, we'll inform the council as that progresses. So with that said, the recommendation is to approve the resolution with the preliminary and final funding allocations for the projects for the IKEA field, as well as the city hall, as well as the city administration and capacity building. And that concludes my presentation, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you very much. Let's check in with the council and see if there's any questions. Councilmember Barnage?
No, thank you.
Councilmember Storton?
I have no questions, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Thank you, Mayor. Just one question. Rob, I appreciate the comprehensive presentation and staff report. The ADA transition plan you mentioned is estimated to cost about $88,000. And then, obviously, if we make the decision to put CDBG funds towards it, $80,000. To fund all the improvements on city-owned property that need to be funded, how much... And that's just to create a plan for those improvements. I'm just wondering, right. Do we have any idea in terms of CIP planning as to how much the total cost of, you know, actual construction cost of ADA projects remaining to be completed sums to?
I don't know that we have an actual number. I think the plan would help us get there and help us identify what those things are so that we could formulate that to get to a point where we have a much more concrete idea.
Excellent. And then we would fund the bulk of those improvements through our capital improvement planning process, correct?
I believe it could be part of that. I think it could be a combination if there are CDBG funds that are available and it's, you know, ADA applicable to ADA compliance, could certainly at least utilize a portion of those CDBG fundings to help offset the costs or any costs that the city may incur.
Okay.
And I would also just add, there are other grant funding opportunities that are out there that we could pursue, depending on the nature of what the report concludes and the timing and all of that. But generally speaking, yeah, that's it could be a hybrid of different options of funding sources.
Excellent. And perhaps the plan would actually go into funding sources as well?
I could see that, yeah, I would imagine that we could do that.
Okay. All right. That answers my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And my only question is going to be for a person who is ready to speak for public speaking. So my questions are for Jenna Nichols. So let's go ahead and open up public comment, and I can see she's already got her hand raised, so I'll turn it over to AGP to let her in.
Okay, Jana Nichols, you'll be up first. If anyone else would like to speak, please raise your hand. Jana, please unmute yourself and make your comments.
Who knew that I was on mute? Good evening, Council. Very much pleasure to be with you again this evening. I wanted to just address a couple of issues, not with regard to this particular cycle. I don't want to undo work that's already been done, but I do want to bring a couple of things to light for consideration and possible discussion for next cycle. So with this particular CDBG recommendation, Arroyo Grande and the City of Morro Bay, who just went back into the Urban County, are the only two cities that are not recommending CDBG funding for Five Cities Homeless Coalition. And I appreciate the priorities that you have given, and I certainly appreciate the complexity of dealing with a number of nonprofits. what I would recommend and ask for is some discussion of the strategic planning around homeless services that your city seeks to engage in and how we can do that. I spent 8 years as the chair, for example, of the City of San Luis Obispo's Human Relations Commission. And in that process, the City Council had prioritized for its public services percentage services to homeless services. Not to any one organization per se, although ultimately it was a long-term commitment to the shelter on Prado Road. But just as you have prioritized ADA for your public facilities funding, I would suggest that you don't have to deal with a myriad of proposals from a myriad of organizations if you focus more strategically on what homeless services might or might not mean. And I argue that not only on behalf of my organization, but really I'm asking for a more strategic partnership. And I know that your city manager and staff have been involved in regional discussions, and I think we're getting back to some of the discussions that we had a couple of years ago of really trying to figure out how to address homeless challenges, not only within the Five Cities area, but across the county. I would also let you know that we are in a situation where we have a good amount of COVID funding coming to us this year. There are many opportunities coming up. We have expanded our outreach program significantly. Our team was out today. We have been participating with the Warming Center, and while I'm pleased that the vaccination clinic is ongoing at the Regional Center, you should know that it forced the Warming Center to move. And with very short notice, we were able to come up with a new location utilizing the Grover Beach Community Center. The city has said this is not a long-term thing, but definitely something that we need to look at for going forward. I'll conclude, but we have a lot of activities on the table, and for me, I'd like a broader discussion and at least some consideration for some long-term focus, and I'm not really sure that we fit in the same pool as some of the other nonprofits that are being funded through the community grants program. That said, we sincerely appreciate the partnership that we have and look forward to continuing to work with you.
AGP, if you can still leave Ms. Nichols live, I have a few questions for her. So, Dana, hi, it's so nice that you're here. So I have a few questions, two regarding the application. I'm trying to understand what I'm seeing, and one regarding one of the comments you just made. So the first question is, I read your application, and it enumerated how many were housed and how many evictions were stopped. And so my first question is, for most of 2020, evictions weren't on the table in the state of California. So I'm trying to understand where those numbers came from. Can you help me understand that one?
So we have a number of people who fell behind in rent, and while the moratorium, we'll use that term, although we've been asked not to use that term, has been in place, that date kept changing. And people were also at risk of losing housing for issues other than their inability to pay rent. So we were able to use, for example, our COVID CDBG money through the county, CV1, we have expended more than $100,000 in rental assistance. That will change now that the state is rolling out its emergency rental assistance program. We are participating in that, trying to identify high-risk households. But many of those households have already paid 25%. Many of those households have used CDBG funding to try to maintain their rent responsibilities. The other, of course, is that we have a number of folks who are not eligible for federal funding. That changes with the state program, but CDBG has different responsibilities in terms of documentation than some of the other programs. The long and the short of that is people still found themselves at risk. They still found themselves falling behind. And we were able, through CDBG, to do some things that we were not able to do, for example, through our emergency solutions grant funds.
So when you say eviction stopped, you're more talking about keeping people afloat rather than actually, like, stopping an imminent eviction.
Well, they all had to have had a, and much of this was prior to the moratorium being put in place, they all had to have a 3-day pay or quit or a 15-day pay or quit. They all had to have some action by their landlord before we were able to provide assistance.
Got it. Okay, and my second question is, looking at these numbers, it would make it look like Arroyo Grande has a far higher percentage, to the tune of almost triple the rest, the entire county. This can't be right in terms of a proportional issue within the city of Arroyo Grande. So something is skewing that number. And can you help me understand why that number is so vastly different than any other city or the county itself?
So you are not seeing some of the work we're doing with the city of Grover Beach. We have because they are not part of the urban county, we have a more than $250,000 grant program going on with them for housing placement and homeless prevention, eviction prevention. What I will say, and this is a nuance that many cities have asked for, and so we are tracking in two different ways. Do you care where they come from, or do you care where we get them off the street and placed to? So there are two zip codes at play. Someone who has been living in your community homeless for a long time but came from Exeter, are they an out-of-county resident or are they a local resident? And if we house them in Arroyo Grande, are they now your resident? Or because they were living on the street in Grover, they weren't your resident, but now they're your resident? I don't mean to make that really muddy, but for example, we have a strong relationship with some of the apartment property owners in Arroyo Grande. We've been, you folks have been very successful in developing some affordable housing. And so we will utilize that housing as we're able to. That said, we also get a lot of calls for homeless prevention that are clearly Arroyo Grande residents because they're living there. And we get a lot of calls for assistance. Let me, fix my car repair. Let me register my car. Insurance, utility. So we have a high percentage of those folks as well. We are kind of the housing, rapid rehousing and eviction prevention agency within the continuum of homeless services. We provide those services countywide. But our hope and our core funding is for services in South County. And so if you look at housing, that may be a little broader, but if you look at what we're doing with our immediate needs fund in paying for utilities or something else, that's going to be wholly focused on really the five cities area.
Okay, so maybe I didn't phrase my question very well because I'm not sure you answered it. So let me see if I can say this another way. So I'm going to give the numbers that were in the application. Just by city, Atascadero House 2, Morro Bay 1, Paso 6, Pismo 2, San Luis Obispo 7, Countywide 7, Arroyo Grande 19. So, I'm not understanding why that number is so large. You said different cities track numbers in different ways.
No,
that doesn't really tell me why there's a difference in the numbers unless within those numbers there are differences in reporting.
No, the issue is, we have a strong relationship with the Arroyo Grande landlords.
So this is saying that 19 homeless were housed in the city of Arroyo Grande, not necessarily that these are people that were from Arroyo Grande.
And that's what I was getting at, is we have now been asked to track both ways. So
So this includes both then?
No. Keep in mind, I wrote this grant back in October. So much has changed since then. But this, one of the things that came out, for example, with the COVID funding was the cities did, in fact, ask, well, we want you to develop, to just, you know, share this funding geographically. And so we asked the same thing. Do you want to know where they're being housed in, which is traditionally what we have been asked to report in, or do you want us to report on where they're coming from? I can go back and give you that detail now. Those particular numbers are where we house them.
Okay, got it. All right, thank you very much.
Sorry, I don't mean it complicated.
And finally, you said that Morro Bay was the only other community, obviously we're not considering Grover Beach in this, that did not recommend using CDBG funds for homeless services. Does Morro Bay have a community grant program like we do?
I cannot answer that. They chose instead to allocate their 50% to develop housing as opposed to services, but I can't speak to their grant program. Yeah,
but you didn't apply for anything else in their city besides that one?
No, I applied to CDBG to all of the cities because we are providing housing services countywide.
Are there any other cities that you have applied for some sort of grant that comes out of their general fund, like ours does?
Pismo Beach, and historically we have with Grover Beach. We are not currently because we have a large community development block grant with it.
Got it. All right, thank
they
you.
They are also housed in our warming center at the moment. So.
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much for that. So, yep, I see you, Kristen. I'm going to the council. Just hold on. All right. I'm pretty sure that Council Member Barnage, a little birdie, was whispering in my ear that she's got a question for you, Jana.
Jana, we spoke earlier today, and I think, and I just want to make sure, when we're talking about Pismo Beach, I know they, and just, I think they gave you, Five Seas Homeless Coalition, $5,000 from their CDBG money, and they gave you $20,000 or $25,000 from their general fund. Can you correct me if I'm wrong on that?
No, that is correct. We received about a $5,400 recommendation for CDBG, and we received an additional $25,000 from their general fund grant program.
Okay, thank you, Jana.
Councilmember Storton, do you have any questions of Jana?
I do not. Thank you.
Mayor Pro
Tem? Yes, thank you. Appreciate you being here, Jana, and certainly the call to for us to reevaluate how we look at CDBG funds in the future. When we're looking at the specific need that you're applying for here in the application, as it relates to some of the other funding sources that you've received, ERAP funds, CARES Act funds, like you mentioned, the COVID funds, would these be essentially, would they allow you to administer these programs in a more flexible way without those strings attached?
Yes, and I mean that we still have the responsibility of certifying that someone is homeless, or if, for example, for those move-in deposits. So this is what we requested, was both for move-in deposits as well as homeless prevention rental assistance. So certainly the responsibilities we have in terms of documentation allow some flexibility, but we still have some responsibilities in terms of tracking. What this particular program does, particularly because it's apart from the COVID funding, is that we don't have to find a nexus with a COVID impact. And so if somebody didn't have, they need rental assistance, but they didn't lose their job, maybe it was because there were rains in the fields or whatever. I mean, the opportunity that this funding provides is indeed more flexible because we don't have the nexus of the COVID responsibility of documenting that. That said, we still have to ensure that we're not providing a duplication of benefits, so we're not paying it twice, etc. I will say, and I'll be very brief, we are a partner with the local partner network for the new emergency rental assistance program that the state is getting ready to roll out. I can't give a lot of details because we're still trying to figure it out, but we will be participating in that program and trying to identify those who are most at risk and most vulnerable of losing housing through that program.
Okay, and I guess we're looking at this particular discussion as CDBG funds in the future as a potential policy change from our council. So you would have a use, obviously, beyond COVID impacts for these funds. These are continued programs that you're operating
after
the pandemic.
Correct, and we received a $60,000 recommendation utilizing county funds last year in acknowledgement that they wanted to fully maximize the 15% available, acknowledging that we didn't necessarily receive that 50% allocation from the other cities or this city. This year, the county is being more specific, saying, okay, we're going to allocate our 15%. You all have to decide what you want to do. And as I say, we have a lot of discussions on the table right now in terms of regional efforts, and I think a lot will play out in the coming year. I just know that by the time we come around to applying, it's hard to change the discourse, and so I'm hoping that we can have that conversation tonight, or at least some consideration, so that when it comes around 8 months from now, you all can say, okay, we talked about this. This fits with our new strategies and whatever's developed since.
Okay, great. Thank you. Those are all my questions, Mayor.
Thank you. And we still have public comment open, so let's go ahead and see if there's anyone else who would like to comment on item 9A.
Madam Mayor, there were no other raised hands.
Butler?
We won't tell her. Okay, I'll go ahead and close public comment at this time, and let's bring this back around to the council. So let's have some comments and potential action. So we will start with Council Member Barnidge. I know that issue is very dear to her, so I want to let her speak first.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I am comfortable moving forward this year with staff's recommendations. I sort of kick myself because Councilmember George and I last year did bring up some reservations we had about how this kind of plays out. And if it was just, if there really wasn't a point to some discussion, I certainly understand why we did it. But so I should have brought this up last time we had this item before us. I actually had some thoughts recently after that, just a couple days ago, when some information came that I became aware of, and so I really started to think about, I talked with Councilmember George this morning, she's not on the call, but I have some thoughts about it. I think that next year I really would like to see Council give direction to staff that every year we dedicate these 15% for public services to homeless services. Anyone could apply for that who is within the who is a nonprofit that takes care of the homeless. But I think that we need to, that piece of the pie that the community grants is giving out to all the nonprofits, the Public Art, the Meals on Wheels, CASA, all these amazing, amazing nonprofits. I think that homeless services for me really rises to the top, especially with what I'm seeing around the state. With the tent cities that are popping up, I'm sure you've all seen them, Isla Vista, Berkeley, Santa Maria even, San Luis Obispo. And I know that that is something that is not going to go away anytime soon. And I think that it's prudent for the council to dedicate so that each year these homeless service providers that are doing a job that we really don't do and don't know how to do, I think that it's really fair for us to say thank you for agreeing to do this, host the warming shelter, which we know that we need the warming shelter. We never want to get rid of that. And they have to basically budget, fly by the seat of their pants, and go around and scramble and come up with money to put this together. And it behooves the cities to have a warming center and to have keep people off the streets. I think that to spend the $10,000 or $15,000, it shows that we're committed to these citizens that are struggling. It also shows that we value these nonprofits that are doing this amazing work. And it also, I think, in the end, saves our taxpayers' money, because Five States Fire Authority just spent 3 hours last week putting out a fire that was started at a homeless camp. And we do have homeless camps, and Public Works has to clean them up. And so all these things cost the taxpayers money on the back end. And so I'd really like to be a little bit more proactive about it instead of reactive, and spend a little bit of money each year to hopefully just help the problems that we're facing and that, you know, the nonprofits can take care of. Jana sent me her report for 2020, and it said that 20 to 25% of the clients of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition say that Arroyo Grande is their last, is their what they call home. So I think that's important. And so I think it was a good idea how we did it before, because of the slicing up of the pie and that all the different the admin that goes along with it. But I'm just not feeling comfortable not giving that 15% anymore to public services. So I wanted to have this conversation tonight, even though we're going to move forward with this, as far as I'm concerned, because I really want to make sure next year for realsies that we really, really put this at least as an option. And so that would be my direction this evening, along with moving forward with staff's recommendation for this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Barnage, and for your leadership on this issue. I have a question for you based on what you just said. So I'm listening to you very carefully, because I look to you, because this is something that you live, because this is the committee that you're on and all of that. So my question to you is, if we were to allocate that money as that piece just for homelessness, as you, or homeless services, as you stated, as our commitment, then would that be in lieu of the community services grant, so that would open up for those other nonprofits, so that Five Cities Homeless Coalition or other related services would be able to know that they could get that access to that 15%, and then everybody else goes to the other one? Is that your vision?
You know, I hadn't really thought of that, but I think what I'm looking for, so I'd be up for that discussion. What I'm looking for is for these homeless providers to have some sort of a sure thing every year. And I think if we can say generally that's homeless services, come to us and apply, at least they can kind of count on that. So I think that I would be okay as far as the other grants go, but I certainly think that 10 to 15,000 is almost no money compared to what they're expending. So I'd be open to, I just want a sure thing for them, but I'd be open to that option as well.
Okay. And I have a question for David Hirsch. So I'm going to just kind of preempt here and ask how do I address you? It's city attorney, but it's not Tim Carmel. He warned us that we were going to see somebody with hair tonight. So, Mr. Hirsch, my question is, you know, we gave sort of like wishy-washy direction last year, and we kind of said, well, we kind of want to, and then we didn't get there, and you heard Councilmember Barnage say that she wanted to have something happen for realsies next year. So my question is, do we have to, can we give that direction right now, or do we need to re-agendize that later?
I think it's appropriate to re-agendize it and have a more full discussion. The agenda item is rather focused on the 2021 allocations.
Okay, thank you. I was hoping to save staff some time, but alas. All right, let's go to the rest of the council. So, Councilmember Storton, do you have comments?
Great, thank you. Mayor, I appreciate your questions, because that was actually a question I had as well. So I would entertain having a discussion about this at a later agenda-ized item. And one of my questions, too, would be at that time is, can we, within the rules of meeting these grants, actually designate a specific entity to give these funds to, as opposed to denying the opportunity to a variety of public services that are out there? Can we just say this is just going towards homelessness or homeless providers? So appreciate Councilmember Barnidge's comments, and I really appreciate Jana and her staff and the work that they do, because I think we've used the word homelessness, but it touches so many different other avenues that go above and beyond even just homelessness. And I think our involvement and peace in that conversation is important. So moving forward, I do agree with staff's recommendations tonight. I really do appreciate the ADA transition plan, and I think that that is something that's going to be important for us to identify certain critical access needs. And maybe this is part of discussion at a further time. I know we do have the community service grants, and I appreciate that this council has designated more funds to supplement that. This year, I would even entertain trying to find ways to continue to enhance that allotment if we're able to, as we look at our budget moving forward. So I think we have a positive direction here with some staff direction, but I plan on just going with what staff has recommended for tonight. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with both council members and would certainly support staff's recommendation as is for tonight, but be willing to discuss kind of a fundamental policy shift in the future to the extent we can, per Councilmember Storton's comments, kind of allocate that 15% cap directly to homeless services. Thank you. Those are all my comments.
Thank you. And I would just concur, and you could tell by my comments that I very much appreciated what Councilmember Barnidge's leadership is showing us here and what she's requesting. So I think staff is hearing loud and clear that we'd like to have this discussion as a matter of policy that might help out for next time around. I know that's several months away. But I also wanted to directly talk to Jana quickly. Jana, you don't need to come online, but I'm just hoping that you're still there hearing me. I had intended to bring this up at council community. Oh, I see your hand there. Thank you. I'm sure you weren't there because only a glutton for punishment would have been there that late, and homelessness was not on the agenda that night. But we had a discussion two council meetings ago where we talked about the fact that Five Cities Homeless Coalition does so much more than just deal with the homeless population. And that we had put on my list of things to do a letter to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition gently asking that you might consider changing your name to something like Five Cities Housing Coalition, and that the community might be more understanding of what you do and more willing to open their minds and their pocketbooks to you. Then Councilmember Barnidge came to me a couple weeks ago and before our last meeting and suggested that, you know, often a letter does not convey tone and it doesn't convey intent. And she was concerned that if I sent that letter that it would be received by your organization as us being critical. And so it was on our last agenda for council communications for me to bring that up to this council, that was the reason I hadn't written the letter yet. But we went so late at our last meeting, we didn't get to council communications. So that was on my list of things to talk about tonight. So I'm hoping that by the council will basically consider this the letter to you, Jana, that we really, really appreciate not only all the work that you do, but the breadth of work that you do is just so much more, and that we were talking about our willingness to help you kind of get your message out to the community as much as your mission. So if you wanted to comment, I invite you to say something if you would like. I just want to make sure that you understand our loving intent with that comment.
I appreciate your comments. This is not a conversation that you're having in a silo. Our board has discussed this more than once. Not only the homeless, but we are providing housing resources countywide. So where does that all fit now, I think, is a very helpful thing. On the other hand, people know us as 5CHC, and you know, we don't want to lose that. But I do appreciate those comments. I will relay them back to our board. you know, we are, of course, dealing with people who are at risk of homelessness, as well as those who have lost housing for one reason or another. And as you know, the spectrum of need is across the board. So I will certainly take those back to our board, and we will certainly take that up and figure out how we can perhaps move forward. But we certainly appreciate the partnership, and yes, we will take all the help we can get in terms of helping our community understand not only the complexity of our human condition, but really opportunities to grow for a better community across the board for all of our citizens.
Thank you. And, you know, again, it's with the greatest of intent that I think you've heard the direction of this council and in moving forward with our partnership. So thank you for everything you do. I'm going to ask that we take a very quick break because I see that Mayor Pro Tem Paulding has dropped off the call. So let's give him a moment to sign back in before we go to a vote. I want to give him the chance to participate. So let's take a very quick 5-minute break, and I will contact him and see if we can't get him back on the line. It looks like we've got Mayor Pro Tem back online.
Hi, sorry about that, Mayor. My internet connection went down. I'm currently on a hotspot, so hopefully the connection is stable.
Thank you. We stopped the presses for you. So we were, while you dropped off, just finishing up the conversation with Ms. Nichols about our intent and in helping them know how much we appreciate the breadth of services that 5C's Homeless Coalition provides. So with that, perhaps someone would want to make a motion.
I'll make a motion to move a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande approving community development block grant projects for year 2021.
Mayor Pro Tem, I'll second.
Okay, any discussion? Okay, the only discussion I would add is to the extent possible, I think the council has been quite clear on direction to staff about bringing a future item forward. Community Development Director Fitzroy, I see you popping in here. Is that good enough for you?
Yeah, crystal clear.
Excellent. All right. City Clerk Mattson, can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Ressam?
Yes.
And why Councilmember George is absent.
Well, I don't know, as we move forward, why I feel good about we didn't give money to somebody, but I feel like we moved forward, so I'll take the win. Okay. Item 10A is considered continued consideration of approval of a COVID-19 relief program, including allocation of SB 1090 funds and or other general funds to the program. And I'll remind the public that this is a continuation from our last meeting because we went so late. So I will turn this over to City Manager McDonald.
Okay. Good evening again. I'm going to share my screen and provide a fairly short presentation for everybody. just going to be highlighting some of the information that we provided in our most recent staff report on this item, just providing a little bit of a supplemental information based on, in addition to what we talked about at our last meeting. So this is continued consideration of this item from February 23rd. Just a brief reminder to everybody, the city did go through a prior grant program round back at the end of 2020. We called it the Business Assistance Grant Program, and we used $60,000 in CARES Act funding. We awarded grants to 18 businesses in the amounts of $1,000 to $5,000 per grant at the end of November. Grants were required to be spent by recipients by the end of January of this year. Uses included payment of rent, utilities, payroll, any PPE needs, and also some physical improvements that were necessary for a few of our grant recipients to make changes to their spaces needed to follow COVID protocol. So after that, the successes we saw from that grant program, we brought forward another relief program looking at using SB 1090 funds. So brief reminder there, the city's received two different types of funds through SB 1090. This comes out of the closure of the planned closure of the Diablo Canyon power plant and a settlement agreement that was reached between PG&E and the cities and the county and for helping some to provide some financial assistance for our local jurisdictions to really account for the economic impacts associated with that closure. So the city's received almost $750,000 as a lump sum payment. That fund is limited in the uses we can put that money toward. We haven't so far allocated that funding for anything yet. We are required to use it for economic development and mitigation for impacts associated with the closure of the power plant. In addition, we are receiving eight payments from the Essential Services Mitigation Fund in the amount of roughly $34,000. Those payments began in 2018, and so far we've received three of them. So we have now a total of roughly $102,000 in that fund. We can anticipate about $272,000 total. That fund does not put a limitation on the uses we can put that money toward. So that's kind of the background on the funding area that we discussed last week. The staff report also includes information about our general fund reserves that we saw at the end of the fiscal year and that we anticipate coming forward into this next, at the end of this fiscal year, just to give council an idea of other funding sources that are available. Our staff report from our last meeting detailed a number of different ideas, which we talked about briefly on the 23rd. So we provided a fairly broad range of different grant programs that we presented for council to consider moving forward with, doing another round of business assistance grants, a shop local gift card reward program that would have folks come forward with receipts showing that they had spent a certain amount of money at a local business in Rio Grande, and that would entitle them to a gift card that the city would purchase. A COVID resiliency grant program, and the idea there is providing assistance to businesses who need to shift some of the way they conduct their business to really weather the COVID tides. And we're thinking largely about our local businesses that needed to increase their online presence and the ability to sell their products online and remotely. And so this grant was kind of looking at providing funding for businesses who need some assistance there in getting their websites either created or maintained or upgraded. And so that's the thinking there. Another category of grant program was looking at business beautification. So for any businesses that are looking at taking this, what has been kind of a downtime for some folks to make those improvements to their physical spaces and kind of help improve just the way that our business fronts look in the community, which is going to help everybody, I think. Another item we looked at was a retraining scholarship program. That's something, you know, fairly unique to us, I mean, in terms of not something that the city has done before, but it would fall within the intent of SB 1090 to help people not only retrain related to the closure of Diablo Canyon, but also retrain from any impacts related to COVID. That program, we would need to kind of take direction, go out, and try to find a partner to help us implement that to make sure that it's going to work really well. Looked at a COVID safety superstar program. So this is the idea of trying to help identify those businesses that are seen as, you know, really running pretty tight ships with their COVID protocols, and rewarding them through work with the South County Chambers of Commerce, who would help identify those businesses, get nominations, and let us know who we can acknowledge and recognize as being a COVID safety superstar. And then we had two other programs that weren't necessarily business-specific, so a water and sewer penalty relief program, and I'll provide a little more information on that item next, and a residential rent relief program, which our prior staff report provides some information about the emergency rental assistance program that the federal government, state, and the county are going to be implementing to help get millions of dollars out to tenants in the county. So the county is anticipated to get over $17 million in assistance that would be available for our local tenants. So just wanted to talk a little more about the water and sewer penalty relief program. After the discussions at our last meeting, we realized that it would probably be helpful for us to provide some additional information there. So just a bit of background, the city has not been able to perform any shutoffs for our water and sewer customers for non-payment since April of 2020 due to the pandemic. So this is related to a number of executive orders that the governor has issued, as well as an order that the city council enacted around this time last year to help make sure that our water and sewer customers would be able to maintain service throughout the pandemic. So we typically use the disconnection of service process to help ensure payment of our past due water bills and penalties. Obviously, it's not something that anybody really enjoys doing, but it does provide quite a motivation to people to make sure they're able to pay their bills. Sometimes it involves them coming in and getting on a payment plan, which the city does offer to pretty much anybody who's willing to come in and work something out with us. So based on the fact that we have not done any water shutoffs, our customers currently owe about $24,500 in unpaid late penalties and another $80,500 in past due water, sewer, and sanitation charges. Again, we do have payment plans available. At least as of a couple weeks ago, we did not have any customers that were actually utilizing a payment plan, just for council's information there. Again, the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, in addition to providing funding for tenants to pay their rent, that funding can also be used to pay utility bills. So we believe that at least some amount of the funding from that $17.4 million that the county is expected to receive may make it into payments for our past due utility bills. And just to remind everybody, because SB 1090 funds, that larger pot of roughly $750,000 is required to be used for economic development, it seems a little shaky for us to look at using that funding source for payment of residential, past due residential bills and penalties. So a few additional notes. We wanted to let everybody know and make sure everyone was aware that our budget does assume that $53,000 in late penalty revenue will be received in our water and sewer enterprise funds. So basically, when we go about budgeting, we know just on average that's the amount that we tend to receive each year, and so we count on that as revenue because that's just what tends to happen. And so any amount of penalty waivers will ultimately impact the revenue we expect in those enterprise funds. So as a result, we may need to look at filling those enterprise funds with general fund money. And that's where it kind of push comes to shove when we talk about doing a penalty relief program. At the same time, we have had customers who have not paid their bills on time, have incurred penalties, but have paid them off. And so just to give council an idea, we wanted to let you know, we believe we've received a little over $32,000 this fiscal year from folks who have actually paid penalties. And so when we thought about what a program like this might look like, there was a concern about just general fairness for folks who have paid those penalties over the past year. Would we want to look at potentially providing them a credit if we're looking at also waiving those penalties that are currently kind of on the books or awaiting payment? So to give you an idea of what that would all entail, we believe that would bring an entire program, if we're looking at penalties specifically, up to about $56,600. So that would include the current charges that are due, $24,500 in current unpaid late penalties and $32,100 in paid late penalties from June 2020 through February 2021. And just to let you know why we picked June 2020, back in April and May, the city did proactively waive penalties at that point in time for customers just considering COVID as a gesture of understanding to our customers. So we also took a look internally to try to figure out what that would entail in terms of administration. It's a little more complicated to provide credits because we have to go back and look at everybody who's paid a late penalty and calculate the amount they paid and credit that each one of those bills. We think we've had about 1,000 bills that we would have to go back and look at. So when we put that all together, we think it may take about 150 hours of staff time. If we're looking at that full package of crediting the current due penalties and those paid over the last several months since June. So that's kind of the full scale of what we're discussing. Also just wanted to mention that considerations such as if we wanted to create a criteria for folks to qualify for a penalty relief program, that's an additional amount of staff time and resources that's just going to be required for us to establish criteria and review those applications and make determinations about each applicant and whether they would meet those criteria. So for instance, if we want to target low-income families, we would need to require some documentation of that. And so we would be looking at, you know, maybe that would change the number if we're not just doing a full-scale penalty relief program, providing relief and credits for everybody. If we're looking, you know, that would kind of, it's not a total apples-to-apples comparison with 150 hours of staff time, but it would take a significant amount of staff time. We do have a number of constraints in our administrative services department at the moment, largely due to leave times that are folks, we have some folks on leave. That was a kind of a main motivation for not, you know, staff, you know, it has provided some, you're probably sensing a little bit of hesitancy. It's just going to take us quite a long time for us to implement a program like this. And it will divert our attentions. So we just wanted to make sure everyone was aware before any decisions were made on that point. And then finally, just wanted to touch on the South County Chambers of Commerce grant administration proposal. So I requested that the chamber go ahead and submit a proposal to administer pretty much any and all of the grant programs that they might be interested in administering. That way, council and the public, we all know what that might entail and the costs that we would be looking at. And so we did receive a proposal, and it is part of the agenda packet for this evening. It indicates that administration of each program would cost $1,700. but the chamber is recommending that we combine a number of the programs into a larger business assistance package. So their suggestion is to combine the business assistance grant program, the COVID resiliency grant program, the beautification grant program, and those three into one. Administration of those three combined would cost $4,500. The retraining scholarship program then would fall under the $1,700 cost area. The shop local gift card reward program is slightly different, and so it falls under a different category of their proposal, which they've identified would cost $2,100 for administration. So that would not include, obviously, the cost of going and purchasing the actual gift cards. And finally, the COVID Superstar program, again, the chamber's offering to partner with us at no cost to the city. So just wanted to let everybody know what those options are. Staff would recommend that moving forward with whatever programs we choose here tonight, given the proposal from the chamber and just existing constraints in our own staffing, that it would be an excellent option for us to move forward with requesting that the chamber go ahead and administer those programs for us. They would be able to make sure that outreach, you know, hit a broad area, broad spectrum of businesses, make sure that we got the word out and advertised, and then helped us with running the review panels themselves and actually, you know, getting all the documentation done, all of the various things that are required for administration. So that would be our recommendation. And then finally, just wanted to let everyone know there was a table included in the staff report from the February 23rd item. We've provided here kind of a summary of what that looked like. It's really the decision points that we're at. And in addition to this table, I've kind of pulled it out and created a separate Word document that I can pull up and fill out as we discuss as well. So just wanted to let everybody know this is what we're looking at this evening. I know there was discussion at our last meeting and kind of some preliminary thoughts and about where each council member might want to go with this, which was kind of a blend, I think. So I thought we would just go ahead and open it up again and get a clear sense of where council would like to go with this. I'm happy to pull this up again and check things off together. We could start at the top or the bottom, or actually, I wonder if maybe the bottom might work best, but that's just a suggestion moving forward. And I believe Jocelyn Brennan from the Chamber is also here to make public comment and to answer any questions.
Thank you so much. Let's start with council questions of staff. So let's start with Council Member Storton. Any questions of staff?
I do. Thank you, Mayor. Whitney, on the sewer penalty credit proposal, I think it said in the staff report that we could potentially use the ESMF funds to cover that. Is that correct?
That's correct. I do believe that that's open for allocation to this purpose. So we would be able to use that funding and essentially fill in our the gap that we would be kind of creating in the those enterprise funds by utilizing the ESMF.
Thank you. That's really the only question I had for staff. I did have a couple for Jocelyn when we get to that point.
Sounds good. Councilmember Barnidge, questions for staff? Mayor Pro Tem, questions for staff?
No, just a question for Jocelyn. Thank you.
We all have questions for Jocelyn, but I do have one question for staff. So, Whitney, my question is with regard to the I very much appreciate the discussion about the impacts to staff on the water and sewer fees, or penalties, I should say. My question is
is there a, I don't want to say easy way, but could we offer that only to people who have been approved for the county's rent relief program? In other words, the county's done all the legwork. When they are approved for that, they can qualify for ours, and then that way they wouldn't necessarily, we wouldn't need to authenticate that, except for to authenticate with the county that they're recipients of that.
So by rent relief program, do you mean the kind of the ERAP, the Emergency Rental Assistance
yes.
Program? And
yeah,
so
I'm sorry.
We would need to, we could. I mean, and that's something that we could do. We could just let everybody know that this is an additional option. If you also, if you qualify for the ERAP program, you can also submit an application to the city with your documentation for a waiver of your penalties or whatever kind of scope council would like us to come up with in terms of what we would offer, put on the table there. It would be a little interesting. We would need to make be clear on it, if they, it's possible they could be receiving relief toward their utility bills through the ERAP program too. So they could be, we may get pay, essentially the city may receive payment directly as a result of that program for those customers who qualify. I know that the funding is available. I mean, it's an allowed use of the ERAP funding, but it's also kind of a secondary priority. So the state has said it may be used for utility payments if enough funding is left over. And so it's difficult to tell, I mean, how much is going to be used solely for direct rent assistance and then how much might be available for utilities. I'm not sure how they make that determination and when they make that determination. Is it like, okay, we're going to do this for a month and see how much money we have left over, or is it a percentage? So that's still a bit unclear. But that is something we could look at doing.
All right, thank you very much for that. So at this time, we'll go ahead and open up public comment, and we've got one member of the public that we're all eager to talk to, so I'll turn it over to AGP.
Okay, first up is Jocelyn Brennan. If anyone else would like to make a comment, please raise your hand.
Hello, Council. Thank you so much for considering this. I know everyone's eager to assist businesses during this time, and so we are just here offering to help in any way that we can to assist city staff in implementing the council's goals. I will say I apologize for not catching this sooner. The one grant that we thought should be done separately is actually the business beautification grant. So if you look in your staff report, you will see that. The scholarship grant, actually, we could combine as this business assistance program. And really, we would partner with, excuse the redundancy, we would partner with Slow Partners, which is part of the office, San Luis Obispo County Office of Education, and they are doing amazing work. I hope you all had a chance to check them out, but if you didn't, I will just tell you quickly that they are providing boot camps and retraining our local residents and increasing their pay by an average of 30%, and also providing employees to local businesses that normally would possibly move out of our area or hire from out of our area. So they're doing an amazing work, and we would partner with them on that. And that would be a minimal cost to the city. It's just straight staff time, and the priority of the funds would go to scholarships for people to take the boot camps. So I'll take questions.
Thank you. I wasn't sure if you were done, Jocelyn. So I can't recall what order I went in. So let's start with Councilmember Barnidge. Any questions of Jocelyn?
No, thank you.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes, I have a couple. Thank you, Jocelyn. I appreciate you, as always, showing up and helping out in many different ways. I had a question about the resiliency grants, and I don't want to sound... I really feel like we need to be focused to the city of Arroyo Grande because we have this is what the funds are for. There are so many other avenues out there where money is coming in from different directions, helping people in a number of different ways. So when I think of this type of grant, and like I said, I don't want to be insulting to anybody, but how do you vet whether a business is suffering from COVID and is in need of assistance for an online presence or website design, or just is floundering as a business in general? Because I want to make sure that the money is successful for the people that are obtaining the money to enhance their business, but I would hope that it was the result of COVID and not poor business practices. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, and that's a really great question, and that's something that we deal with all the time at the Chamber. And what I would say is that, just like the previous business assistance grants, we would create a matrix, and we would create criteria around that. So they would have to prove that they have been impacted by COVID, and that is what they need the funds for. So, for instance, a business that was really successful prior to COVID and then had their operations limited due to COVID, they could easily make that argument in the application process, and they would have to go through the matrix. I know it sounds really fascinating talking about going through the matrix, but I should call it a scoring criteria. So I think that naturally gets vetted through the review panel process. But also, I will say, you know, unfortunately, that the pandemic has not been an equal opportunity pandemic, and some businesses that we were not ready online and were not prepared for something like this to pivot easily have actually already not even been in a position to apply for a grant. So, unfortunately, I think that through the review panel process, we could... you know, we might get a few businesses that fall into that category that you're speaking of, where it's a little bit unsure. But there might be, you know, I would say in Rio Grande, there might be some businesses that were not modernized and they should have been prior to COVID. The Chamber has been, you know, really encouraging businesses to have an online presence because they are competing with everyone on the internet. So we've been encouraging that long before COVID happened. And so there might be some that are actually really ready to do that now and just don't have the resources to do it. So I don't know if that really answers your question, but I want to say that I do think that we have established and we would establish a good scoring criteria where it would vet these businesses and we would give it to those most deserving.
No, I appreciate that. That was a great answer, and I really do appreciate the thought of having a my next question, kind of similar, then this is under the retraining scholarship program. Again, wanting to focus on Arroyo Grande, and I think it's great that we can help people, but what are there any concerns of providing help for somebody where they do get retrained and then they aren't a resident of Arroyo Grande, or they move from their employment in Arroyo Grande to another location, where we lose that benefit? Is that a concern?
Yeah, that's another fantastic question. So the way Slow Partners provides their boot camps is they reach out to local businesses. So in this instance, they would reach out to Rio Grande businesses, and they would find out who needs to scale up, who is hiring. And there are a few really important businesses in Rio Grande that are looking to hire more skilled workforce. And so they would go to them and say, how many people do you want to hire, and what are the skills you want? And so if they went to three or four businesses and they said, well, we need folks with this skill set, then they would create a boot camp around that for those businesses. And then when they have completed their boot camp, then they go into those businesses, and they are basically an intern at that business. Slow Partners pays half their wage. The employer pays half their wage. And they work there and get hands-on training, and it's sort of a long interview process, basically, for the employer. And at the end of, I want to say it's 12 weeks, the person graduates from the program, and that employer, the Rio Grande employer, has the opportunity to hire those folks or not. And the success rate has been really high, and so I always like to say that while the rest of us are standing around trying to figure out how to replace these Diablo Canyon jobs, Globe Partners is actually getting it done. They have placed over 250 local residents into Slo County businesses based on the needs of the businesses. So this would be highly specified to Arroyo Grande. Now, if that person got to the end of their internship and the business wanted to hire them and they didn't want to and they could go take a job somewhere else now with these new skills, that's always a risk that we face.
Okay, thank you. I'm liking your answer so far. And my last question is, I believe you administer the gift card program for the city of Grover Beach. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Under that program, some businesses, it seems like, are more popular than others. Is there some way to balance out to ensure that the gift card program is representative of many different businesses as opposed to the more favorable ones?
Yeah, so the way that is set up is it's really the preference of your council, but the way the Grover Beach Council has set it up is that the if you spend any money in retail, salon, personal services, fitness, or a food or beverage, so restaurant, winery, or brewery, so any business, you can submit those receipts, they're cumulative, and get for $100, you get a $25 gift card. Now, the businesses, and this might be what you're referring to, the businesses that can be a gift card participant have to be in those categories. And so the 22 businesses that you see us highlighting probably on social media are the ones who have in those categories who have applied to be a gift card participant. So now when someone spends $100, they go online, they upload their receipts, and they can choose from those 22 businesses. So far we haven't refused any business in those categories. So the city of Grover Beach did not choose to include grocery, gas stations. They wanted to benefit small businesses and those that were most impacted by COVID, but that was really up to the council.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Those are all the questions I had.
Great question. Mayor Pro Tem Paulding, any questions of Jocelyn?
Yeah, just one question. I appreciate Councilmember Storton's questions and Jocelyn's great answers. On the scholarship program, Jocelyn, I'm just curious about reaching both residents in AG and employees in AG, as the staff report mentions, and you spoke to the fact that Slo Partners would reach out directly to AG businesses. So for residents who are unemployed or who do not work for AG businesses but would want to take advantage of this free training scholarship program, how would we reach them?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Again, you guys have great questions tonight. So really the only way to reach residents would be to do a mailing, which can be quite expensive. So outside of doing a mailing, we would do social media, we would do a press release, we'd hope to get some earned media from that press release, we would do a little bit of digital advertising, and then the chamber would email through all our channels, and we would hope that, you know, everyone would share it and such. It would be the traditional channels that you would think of, you know, like anything else that we do as a chamber or you do as a city to try to reach everyone and make them knowledgeable about that. But, you know, inevitably there will be some people who say, well, I didn't hear about it. And the only way really to ensure that everyone gets the information is to do a mailing, which, you know, I think for Arroyo Grande, if I had to guess, I would say would be in the, you know, if we did a postcard, maybe it would be in the $600,000 or $700,000 range to do a mailing to all the residents.
$600,000 or $700,000, not 700, correct?
Yes, $1,000. Yes.
Okay. And so that obviously wasn't, that level of outreach to AG residents wasn't included in your proposal.
It wasn't. But now actually your question prompts me to think that it could be included as a small sentence on water bills.
Okay. And that would, if the city opted to do that, to mentioned would fall into the wraparound business assistance package for $4,500 would still stand. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, that the cost of that, which I think would probably be minimal to the city and might be a really smart way to do it, would not impact the chamber at all.
Okay. If I guess that was my last question to you, Jocelyn. I appreciate that. I now have a follow-up question to Whitney. Mayor, I don't know if that would be a good time to take that question. Okay. Whitney, is that something the city could do?
To insert some information on our water bills related to outreach on these programs, or that specifically?
Would be that specific program, as it would be the only one that's targeting residents at large of AG as opposed to just businesses.
I would need to double check with our billing department. I know because it's been a little while since I've asked that question, and I can't recall if there was any kind of cost involved with sort of retooling the way we do it. But I know our accounting manager, Nicole Valentine, is actually sitting in our attendee list, so I'm hoping that we could maybe promote her into our, there we go, and that I think Nicole will be able to answer that question directly.
Thank you.
Hi there, can you guys hear me? Okay. Good evening, Mayor and Council members. So I do not recall the exact amount, but I want to say around $600 we be the cost to insert a one-sheet mailer in the water bills. We did it back last spring, probably around the same time we inserted a mailer from the trash company. And so it's definitely something we can do. To include it in the water bill, the way our mailings are sent, we send them to the east side and the west side. So it kind of takes a two-month period to hit all of the residents. So just want to make sure that if we do something like this, that we remember there's a time lag that if customers are applying for something, we'd want to remember that. We can also add a line to the water bill. It wouldn't be large, but we could, we have, I don't know, about as many characters as a text that we could include as well.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Those are all my questions, Mary. Thank you.
Thank you. Nicole, before you leave, I have a question for you. This is going to sound dumb, but I'm not on a commercial account. Mayor Pro Tem's idea prompts me to think that maybe we could do it for all the programs if it's that same $600 and will reach the commercial accounts as well. Would it, or would that be something separate?
I was thinking that we would be mailing it to all water customers. So, yes, it would include commercial accounts as well.
Okay, so why not include everything on there? That's a great idea. All right, thank you so much. And my other questions are for Jocelyn. So if we could have her back. Hi, Jocelyn. First question. I think I remember Grover Beach spending $30,000 on their gift card program. Is that correct?
They actually allocated $60,000 for their gift card program.
And how much of that has been claimed?
Oh, goodness. I think we are... one of my staff is managing this, and I haven't gotten an update as of yet this week, but last week on Monday, the last number, we were at about $25,000.
Okay. So maybe half?
Yeah, and I would say that Grover Beach doesn't, and forgive me for saying this if it sounds negative, but they aren't known as a shopping destination as, for example, spots in Rio Grande are. So this has been like a big stretch for them, and we're really happy with that $25,000 number.
Okay, great. In terms of the safety superstar, since that was the thing I was kind of pushing for, is it possible to have a public nomination component to that? So that we're not just asking people to self-nominate, but that, I put something online about a month ago asking people, who's knocking it out of the park, and it lit up.
with people wanting to recognize businesses that they were feeling great about patronizing.
This is so important right now, and thank you for what you did, and I think it's a great idea. And so what we would do is, I'm relating it somewhat to our Business of the Month program, where we would promote nominations, but it would be for, like you said, people who are knocking it out of the park. You feel very safe going there. You feel like the employees are going out of their way, and the employer is taking every step to keep their employees safe and the customer safe. So we would do it on social media. We would do it, you know, through all the traditional channels to promote it. And it would just be a form or a link that they can simply nominate a business. And then I think we would need to have some verification. So, you know, maybe some secret shoppers, possibly from the Rio Grande Steering Committee, that would go, you know, and verify that they had the same experience. And then, again, review panels are so important. So we would have a review panel for this specific program that would, you know, score folks based on experience and safety protocols, and then select a recommendation to put forward to the council. We would probably maybe put one or two so that there were a couple options, maybe three, unless we had a council member on the, I don't know how it would all work out, but we could figure it out, that there was someone that the council felt great about nominating, and that also the public had nominated and that the chamber wanted to put forward. The main thing is that it would encourage compliance, and it would encourage, I think, other businesses to want that recognition and that, you know, a certain level of social media marketing and things would come with it. And so I think it would encourage compliance.
Thank you for that. And with regard to that, you know, I hope that the time is running short, you know, just considering that things seem to be looking up and vaccinations are out there. How soon could you get that program, and really any of these, not just that one, up and rolling? What's the lead time on what the chamber could do in terms of getting this all started if we say yes to this tonight?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I would say this COVID Safety Superstar program would be probably the easiest to move forward. We would, you know, look at the guidelines for each sector, and we already have sort of a template ready based on the Business of the Month program. But based on the In Business Assistance Grant and Micro Grant, we've already done that with Rio Grande and also with other cities. The one that we haven't done yet is the beautification grant, although I have worked closely with the county on their beautification grant. So that is the one that I think, you know, needs to have a separate review panel and probably a longer process. So to answer your question, I would say we would probably need 3 to 4 weeks to do all the footwork and get all the marketing out there, because a big part of this is like getting the word out. So I would say, exception of the beautification grant, because that might have more specific criteria that we'll need to work with city staff on.
Thank you. And my final question isn't really a question, but I'm going to phrase it as a question. On any of the review panels, can we please include some council member representation so that council members will get the equal opportunity as Councilmember George and I did to participate in the awarding of those monies?
Yes, absolutely. I think any program that is distributing city funding for should have a council member on it.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much. I'll turn it over to AGP and continue with public comment. I don't know if I'm seeing anybody, but go ahead, AGP.
There was no other public commenters.
Thank you. So I'll close public comment, and we'll bring this back around to the council and ask City Manager McDonald to come back on. And we didn't talk this over ahead of time, but I'm just going to go ahead and take her recommendation that we start at the bottom and work our way upwards on the chart. So that way how about this? We can kind of get a consensus on each one of the items, and then once we have decided which ones we want to go forward with, then we can move on to how much we would fund them. Does that sound okay?
Sure. And, okay, so go through the whole thing to pick the ones you want to move forward with, and then drill down into each one with the dollar amounts.
That seems most efficient to me at this okay. time. I just want to do what's efficient.
Yeah, I think that sounds good. Would you like to look at a table to go through this process at this point, or would that be too distracting?
Do you have a, rather than the table, do you just have a clean list we can look at and just kind of, that's enumerated, and we can just sort of look at that, or?
I do.
That way the public can follow along with what we're doing as well.
So I can just pull up the slide on the presentation that just lists the program components that we've been discussing.
All right, so Whitney, how about I let you lead this part, and we can, it's harder when we can't see everyone, so I guess we'll have to ask on each one whether, I guess the question would be, would you want to move forward with this program at this time? And I'll let you handle that with each of us, and I guess ask each directly. Again, we can't really do a show of thumbs because we have a shared screen, so that might reduce the efficiency a little bit.
Got it. Okay, so we can start with the residential rent relief program, and I'm going to, on my side of my screen here, I'm just going to go, Councilmember Barnidge is at the bottom, and I'm going up. I'm just doing it all in one direction, so we can maybe start with Councilmember Barnidge.
So I would not be in favor for that, as I indicated last time, just because we have the money coming from the feds on that. So yes, no thank you.
Okay. How about Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
I would echo Councilmember Barnidge's comments. I don't want to duplicate any efforts at this point in time. So I am not in support of the residential rent relief program at this time.
Okay. Councilmember Storton?
I concur.
And Mayor Ray Russom?
I concur.
Okay. Okay, moving on to the Water and Sewer Penalty Relief Program. Let's go ahead and start again with Councilmember Barnidge.
So as much as I struggle with this because of the staff time, and then also going back to, it doesn't seem fair not to relieve the people that paid fees and late fees, or just, you know, if we're going to give, if we're going to relieve the current penalties. So looking at how much staff time that's going to, I think you said 150 hours. So I was actually thinking the same thing that the mayor was thinking. How can we have someone else do the work for us? The county, yay! I'm definitely in favor of that if we can make it work. I really would like to get these fees, late fees, waived, especially if there's low-income people. But yet you also indicated that some of that might be already, we might get money back from the rent relief for that program as well. So I'm a little torn unless we can figure out a really clean way to do it. It seems kind of like complicated right now. I'd love to get, you know, we talk about the businesses that have struggled, and I definitely know that they have, but I'd love to get some money back to just the residents, especially low-income residents. So we can think of a better way to do that.
Okay. How about Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
I did like the mayor's idea that if we could coordinate to what Councilmember Barnidge mentioned, if we could coordinate with the county through their ERAP program, but I do understand, and you had reiterated this, Whitney, that part of that is the utility fees. So if they're getting reimbursed for that, and then we're getting reimbursed. I don't see necessarily how that could work. It seems problematic. The staff time is an issue to me, especially if it's 150 hours, coupled with the fact that we have staffing constraints. We would need to only use the ESMF funds, too, because as the staff report mentions, the SB 1090, the other fund isn't appropriate for this use. I do like the staff recommendation in the staff report, and I'm not sure if that's what Councilmember Barnett was mentioning, but where it says recommending an existing payment plan option to be modified and include no additional late penalties will accrue, no interest will accrue, and then payments may occur over a 12 to 18 month period. I think that if we did that moving forward and tied that program to the current executive order that limits our ability to perform utility shutoffs, so when that's lifted, then maybe this aspect of our program would lift. I think that's a fair way to kind of handle this moving forward. Plus, it gives us the opportunity to evaluate, in months from now, whether people are paying their bills or not, if it's a growing problem. And I think we could address this at our mid-year budget and look at surplus funds over our general fund reserve to handle that too. So to me, just taking that action at this time makes more sense.
Okay, Councilmember Stort.
I think in this particular option, there are too many moving parts and some unknowns where reimbursement or funds may come in a different way. So I'm not interested in pursuing this one. I would agree with Mayor Pro Tem Paulding, though, about the payment plan option and addressing it that way. Otherwise, as far as creating a program, I'm not interested.
Okay, Mayor Ray Russa.
I agree with staff on this, that we already have a payment program structure that we can kind of morph. And so I like Mayor Pro Tem and staff's discussion, and that would be the only thing I would support on this one.
Okay. On this item, I'll just sum up. What I'm hearing is we're not going to move forward with a program at this time. We, as staff, we will certainly look to implement those slight modifications to our payment plan options. And then I would just throw it out as well, certainly as things change over time, this is something that if council would like, we could bring it forward again. So just wanted to assure everybody it's not forever dead and gone. So, okay, does that sounds accurate? And seeing nodding heads and thumbs up. Excellent. Okay, our COVID safety superstar program. We'll start with Councilmember Barnett again.
Yes, please.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
I would concur, especially given the fact that it's a no-cost option and it's a great idea.
Excellent. Councilmember Shorten.
Yes.
And Mayor Ray Russom.
Whoever came up with this idea should, like, you know. No, I'm just kidding. Absolutely.
Okay.
I just want to go on record that I came up with the name. You came up with the idea.
I have said 1,000 times, I am not a creative, so I appreciate that. It's a great name, Kristen.
Okay, we can move on to the retraining scholarship program then. Councilmember Barnett.
So I like some of the other programs we're going to talk about after this one a little bit more. I think this is a good idea. I don't know if I want to water down some of the other grant programs to focus on this, depending on how much money we allocate toward everything. So I'm kind of a maybe on that one.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
Thank you. So I appreciate Councilmember Barnett's reluctance on this one. I was reluctant at our previous meeting, but the conversation today did spark a little bit more interest because I think it could become quite an opportunity. opportunity for our businesses and our residents, especially if Slo Partners is well positioned to implement a process in a streamlined fashion through the chamber to really create some results and help us, you know, help our residents and businesses and employees rebound from this economic crisis. So I guess I would be in favor of more discussion on that item. However, I think it was a great idea to include a notice to our residents in the utility bill, but the two-month process of hitting the whole city, I think, is a pretty decent setback to our ability to properly notice in a timely fashion in order to implement this program. So I'm not sure how to overcome that hurdle. I'll look to the council, as to whether there's support for this, but I'm still open-minded on this one.
Okay, Councilmember Storton.
Thank you. Yeah, before today I actually wrote no next to this, but after I heard Jocelyn's explanation, it became more clear to me. I think it became more valuable than I expected. So I am more in favor of this now, particularly with the skills assessment portion and providing a benefit to specifically to AG businesses. As far as some type of notification, I don't know if this could be posted on Channel 20, certainly on our website and things like that, if we need to go something, move forward with this. The part of the discussion that I'm not sure about is how much money do we put towards this to make it beneficial. And if we're grouping this program with a couple of the other ones, it seems like there's a financial benefit as far as the management by the chamber, but that's further discussion as well. But at the moment, I'm more in favor of this being implemented.
Okay. Mayor Ray Russum?
Well, like Councilmember Storton, at the last meeting, I was an absolute no on this, and I actually spoke to Jocelyn about this in between as we meet regularly, and I am a wholehearted yes after hearing details about this before. So I would definitely be in favor of moving forward with this, and there's a couple of reasons. In terms of economic development for our businesses who are already successful here, that's a great thing. And so it benefits businesses directly, but if it's an Arroyo Grande resident who is getting trained for a business that is not in Arroyo Grande, they still live here and they're going to spend money here. And that's a good thing too. So I don't think we lose on either end of what Slo Partners is doing here. And so, you know, it remains to be seen. It sounds like the council is relatively favorable. It's a question of how much we want to allocate to this maybe. But I am a strong supporter of leaving this in our arsenal this week when, as I said before, I wasn't at all last time.
Okay. So at first I was summing it up as a solid maybe, but now I think that I'm hearing a yes, and we can maybe talk more as we go into more detail. I also believe that Jocelyn may have a little bit more information, too, on the cost side of things, if we're trying to get a sense of how much money we want to look at. And then I would also say, because this is new and it's has some continued unknowns, this is something we could also look to bring back to council with an update and further recommendation. So just wanted to throw that out as well as we come back to it and drill down in the details. Okay, the business...
Excuse me. Sorry, Whitney, just one quick question on that item. It would, if possible, if you do bring that back or when you do, to have a little bit more specific scope of services from the chamber or Slo Partners than what we had previously received on that item would be helpful, especially describing the outreach component to the city residents at large.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. I think, and I, because it helps my brain to see it in a place, I can see where that direction goes in the chart that I have built in my head, so that's helpful. Okay, our business beautification grant program concept. We will start again with Councilmember Barnidge.
Thank you. I would not be in favor of this, although I think it's a nice idea. I think that we really need to focus on the other programs that have a little bit more bang for their buck. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
I, too, am not in favor of this program. One of the primary reasons is that it would assist businesses that have storefronts and business locations, but for those that are operating through home occupancy permits or in other fashions, it really doesn't allow them to participate. So for that reason and others, I am not in support of this program.
Okay. Councilmember Shorty.
I was originally a yes on this, but given the explanation to some of the other programs, I think this one is a no support. And we can spread ourselves a little too thin if we do too much with several different things. So I would take this one off my list and say no.
Okay, and Mayor Ray Russell.
I concur.
Okay. Moving on to our COVID Resiliency Grant Program concept, we can start with Councilmember Barnidge again.
Yes, this is one of the ones that I'm definitely in favor of. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Just a clarifying question. This one was not in the, this one is included in the business assistance package, correct?
That is correct.
For the $4,500 amount, okay.
Right, and just to clarify, the way I'm envisioning this discussion kind of fitting in with as we drill down, we can then talk about if we want to move some of these under a larger umbrella program, I think, if that makes sense, kind of going from here.
Yeah, you really kind of preempted my next question there, so I appreciate that, reading my mind. To me, if we could expand the small business or the business assistance grant program to just be a little more flexible, as opposed to earmarking a separate program just for this purpose, I think that we are creating a much more fair and level playing field for all businesses that have needs that stem from, you know, the pandemic response and PPP and all of that kind of stuff, and then into whether they need some help, you know, creating an online presence. I think this one's almost a little too specific, and I would just encourage rolling that into the business assistance program if possible.
Okay, got it. Councilmember Storton.
I was a little more worried about helping businesses that were already floundering due to maybe poor management as opposed to anything else, but Jocelyn was able to answer my questions on that one, and I think with the review panel process, that alleviates some of that concern, so I would be
okay. And Mayor Ray Ressam?
I shared Councilmember Storton's concerns, and I was appreciating the answers that we got, but also I look at this even as a business development tool, so even if economic development tool, so even if it was a business that kind of, I don't want to say slipped through the cracks, but maybe was a little marginal, but we get to keep them and let them expand, that's a good economic development tool. So I am in favor of leaving this in.
Okay. And now our Shop Local Gift Card Reward Program. Councilmember Barnidge.
Thank you. I wasn't as much in favor of this at the last meeting, just because I want to make sure we don't water down these programs and we end up with not really impactful relief. And so, but after hearing Jocelyn talk about the Grover Beach program and how much money has been spent there, and that's in Grover Beach, and so I feel like this is a good idea. I think that I'd be open to hearing what other council members say.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
I would echo Councilmember Barnidge's concerns. I wasn't so excited about this particular program because I'm more excited about about some of the others, I think that they have a more direct nexus and kind of, you know, just like Councilmember Storton mentioned, we have to look at the overall amount that we're allocating, and I don't want to spread it too thin. So I'd be open to discussing it more, but would say move it to the bottom of the list, and if there's money left over, then talk about what its needs are.
Okay. Councilmember Storton?
I was originally not sure, but after tonight, I'm actually in favor of it. And actually, of all of our programs, this one actually sounds like fun for people when you can get something back, and it's tangible, and it kind of makes you feel good about shopping local. So I would be in favor of this. I don't think we need 60 grand put towards it, but I think we could give enough to make it enjoyable and a good turnout for people. So I'd say yes.
Okay, Mayor Ray Rossum.
I don't mean to poo-poo Councilmember Storton, but I'm basically the opposite. I'm not sure that having fun is the charge of this money. And I think Jocelyn kind of nailed it when she said, you know, Arroyo Grande is already a shopping hub. And I would rather this money go straight to businesses. Now, I get the idea that we're buying something from businesses, which is helping boost them. But I don't know that this is a major concern in the city of Arroyo Grande, and I'd rather have that money go straight to the business assistant grant to those businesses that truly need them. I'm not sure that this really targets as effectively as that or the COVID resiliency grant could target those businesses in need. And so I would much rather see our money go that way rather than as a percent, essentially a percentage of sale or a what amounts to 120% on a sale. So I feel that that's less of a priority than the other two, so I would not be in favor of this one.
Should I chime in because I was the swing vote on that? I would just, yeah, I'm persuaded by the mayor on this and not in support of this program at this time.
Okay. I actually have Councilmember Barnett indicating a maybe, and Mayor Pro Tem Paulding was a probably no unless we had extra funding, and then clarified that just now. Councilmember Storton with a yes, and the mayor with a no. So I'm still in the just want to make sure. It sounds like we're sliding to the no on that one, but maybe if there's second thoughts as we go through the funding amounts, then certainly that could change. Does that sound like a good direction from at this point? Okay. And finally, the Business Assistance Grant Program. I have a feeling where this might go, but let's go ahead and run through it. Councilmember Barnage.
Yes, this is my favorite one, the best for last. We've done this before with much success, and I think it really is really helpful to the businesses, and it just kind of gets straight to the meat of the matter. So yes.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
I concur with Councilmember Barnett and would love the opportunity to serve on the panel for the Business Assistance Grant Program. Thank you.
Councilmember Storton.
Yes.
And Mayor Ray Russom.
Absolutely, yes. I do want to add something in, however. I want to make sure that we at least communicate to the chamber, and I know the chamber is sympathetic. In the first round, it was clear to me that we didn't get enough of the word out based on the fact that I had so many people talking to me about how things were difficult, and then I didn't see their names in the applications. So I want to make sure that our outreach on this is robust, and that's a piece of where that money is going to go, because I want to make sure that we don't do it. It was very narrow in the first round because we tried so hard to get it out quickly. I'd rather go far and wide on this one to make sure that we can really help a lot. So, yes, absolutely.
Okay. this point, would it be helpful for me to pull up a chart and we can go through and talk funding amounts and any additional kind of direction on individual programs?
Yeah, can you, is it possible for you to quickly edit your chart to pull out the ones we said no on so that we can get them all on one screen? Okay, maybe not. All right.
It's a sausage-making kind of experience, probably. But maybe, I mean, but we can go through, let's see. I have, these are in a couple of different formats. Have them in this PowerPoint and then also in a separate Word document if it would be easier. So I think actually let me pull up the Word document. It's not going to have colors, but it'll be a little easier for me just so people don't go slightly cross-eyed when I pull this up. Okay. So it could be perhaps the best point here would be to talk about those programs that we would like to pull under the Business Assistance Grant Program, if any. So would you like to look at funding things individually or as a whole and just have them added to the larger pot of business assistance grants? Does that sound like a good place to start?
I see Jocelyn's got her hand up. Maybe we can ask Jocelyn before we comment.
Would it be helpful? I can stop sharing as well, so we can actually do that better.
Oh, sorry, Council. I actually had my hand up previously to just speak to the retraining scholarships, the amounts. So I'm here for questions, but I'll let
Whitney. All right, I'll put you on the spot. Summarize our answer or our question. Yeah. Our question is, do we want to fold perhaps the COVID resiliency in with the business resiliency? I'm not saying that all right, but do we want to fold those together? Would that be most efficient? And would we save money on the administrative end if we did that?
The way I'm picturing it is a streamlined process where people can apply and then they can choose how they want what they're applying for. So maybe they're applying for the resiliency grant. And so it does, there's some efficiencies there. So yes, I would suggest streamlining really anything that the council wants to under the business assistance grant, with the exception of the beautification grant, which I think is not on the table at this point. So yes.
Okay, I think we got that answer. Go ahead, Whitney.
Okay, so I'll return to this table, and so we can talk about then, I believe that the gift card reward program, which was a likely no, so we can maybe skip that one. I see what you're saying. It would be lovely if I could just quickly delete that. The COVID resiliency grant program, is that something that we should go ahead and just add to the description of the business assistance grant program as an allowed use? Or would you like to earmark some funding specifically for that? I think that's where it really comes into play.
Whitney and Mayor, if I might just interject, if the council could discuss the overall amount that we agree we're working with before we make the individual allocations, I think that would be helpful. Okay. I believe we had talked about a range of like 150,000 or 100 to 150,000 at our last meeting, but I think getting there first might be helpful.
Okay. So would it be helpful for me to kind of run through everyone again on that point and try to gain a consensus on the total dollar amount? Maybe I could go in reverse order.
I believe that when you said reverse order, did you mean me or did you mean by the program?
By people. So okay. I would start with Mayor Ray Russom. If that sounds like where we want to go at this point, coming up with the total dollar amount. And then I suppose as a corollary question, are any of our general fund monies on the table here? My sense is no, but that's just my sense, and so it's certainly up to council's discussion. So I think that's a kind of two-part. How much money and where is it coming from?
I remember at the last meeting we asked this question, and I actually looked to you for guidance prior to the meeting, and I believe that your number was, and I'm very sorry I don't have it in front of me because I have this giant pile of notes here and I can't find it. I believe you said 25%. Is that the number that you gave me last?
I think it was 20, but
20. Okay.
And
so
then
20%.
It's a question of, is it from the 750 or from the almost of the roughly $1 million that includes the ESMF money? So I'm actually going to add a line here just to be clear.
My thoughts on this are to stick with that 20%, and perhaps we could do, I don't have an opinion of which funding source, but the SB 1090 funds are more restrictive, so I would just suggest that we err there so that we can use the other stuff a little bit more, I don't know, liberally, I don't know what the willy-nilly, we can use it for more opportunity in the future. So I think I would err towards the SB 1090 funds, and again have that be that 20%. I feel like there was something else I was going to say about that, but I can't remember. So I'll listen to the rest of the council.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It was general fund. That was the other thing. And I would not be in favor of spending general fund monies at this time. We can always make that decision as part of the budget process, but as that's right in front of us, and we're going to get some significant analysis, and we're about to head into a two-year budget cycle, I would very much like to discuss that at a future date. So I don't want to take it off the table, but I don't want it as part of this discussion right now.
Okay. Councilmember Sorton.
Last time I mentioned my thought was between $100,000 and $200,000, and 20% of the 750 is $150,000, so I think that would be a good range out of the SB 1090 funds and no general fund money.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
I concur on both the SB 1090 and no general fund.
Okay. And Councilmember Varnish?
I concur.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and fill in the total here. Oops. And at this point, we're not looking at anything in these categories. So going back up to the concept here with our business assistance grant program, I believe, so we're looking at that program, the resiliency grant program, the retraining scholarship program, and the COVID superstar program. Those are the ones that we had under the yes category that I believe out of our discussion there. I guess the biggest question, and talking also hearing from Jocelyn, does the resiliency grant kind of get added to the description of the business assistance grant, or does it have its own funding? So maybe that's trying to figure out if that's the next question or if we want to look at the total allocation to the program. But I feel like the first question is maybe do we put them together?
And also, it might be easier to go backwards at it, because if we have smaller programs that we're going to chip off at the beginning, then that leaves the big chunk for the one that the council really wanted to put it.
Okay, got it.
You know what
okay,
I'm saying?
Okay, so, yeah, exactly.
But
so
how much do we want to carve off the chunk, I think, is the real question.
Okay. So then if we were to kind of go in reverse order then, we know the COVID Superstar program is not going to cost us anything, but that we want to do it. So we would say a yes here. And we will work with the chamber to determine, you know, I'm not sure if council wants to provide us any further direction on how we envision that program, the way that the city would be partaking in that recognition of folks if we wanted to create a certificate or a commendation. Jocelyn and I had talked about the idea of creating kind of a decal that folks could affix to their windows, or if there's some other type of item that we want to get direction on, or if it's enough for us to just kind of take what the council or what the chamber would recommend, that the role we play in that, and move it forward. I'm happy to go that route as well.
Whitney, I see Jocelyn's hand is up again. You don't have to stop sharing in order to bring her in.
Okay.
So, AGP, can you activate Jocelyn?
Sorry. I'm trying to visually show that I'm here to answer any questions that you may have. As far as the COVID Safety Superstar Program, I would say that, yes, for sure, a decal that they can put in their window, and actually a commendation from the City Council would really mean a lot. So that is, if the Council can concur with that, we would really be excited to get that going, and I think it would be very meaningful to the businesses. I also had my hand raised briefly to say that if the council decides to approve a lump sum for a business assistance package, that I do think through the differentiating review panel process, based on who applies, we can, based on the needs. So if we got a lot of businesses that applied for the business assistance grant but didn't necessarily get so many that applied for the resiliency grant, that we could, through the review panel, we could allocate those funds accordingly based on need. So I just wanted to offer that as an option.
Jocelyn, would you suggest any sort of a per award maximum like we did the first round?
Yeah, I would say that we're likely to see the same thing that we saw in the first round, that a lot of businesses need to pay their rent so they don't lose their location, and they also need to pay their employees, or they need to pay themselves if they're a sole proprietor. So I would say that in the city of Aurora Grande, I would say $2,500 goes a long way for just the business assistance grant. If we're talking an overall business assistance package, I would say that the $150,000 to $200,000 could be allocated easily based on who applies and what their needs are. I don't know if that answers the question, but...
Well, the first one around, we get up to $5,000,
right?
Did you think that was an adequate amount, or that it sounds like you just said $2,500, so what is your recommendation there?
Right. So if it was as a package, I would say that, you know, if we had to spread these funds out across all the different needs that people might be applying for the business assistance grant program, I would say $2,500 buys them 1 to 2 months of rent or payroll that I think can help them. But it really, so this is what's the challenge that's before the council tonight, is to determine amount of funding without knowing who's going to apply and what the needs are. So in some way, I feel there's some wisdom in allocating a certain amount of funding for all the grants, and then it, through the review panel process, it can be allocated to where to meet the needs of the businesses.
Go ahead, Whitney.
I realized, okay, so, and then I stopped for a second. Okay, we're trying to regather to look at next steps. So I think we've determined total allocation of SB 1090 funds up to $150,000 total for all these programs. It sounds like there could be, you know, we could allocate quite a lot to that business assistance grant program and really just trust in the review panel process. to allocate the funding according to the applications that are received and the amounts that they need and what seems appropriate in terms of maximum amounts. Or the other option is for council to establish a maximum amount. But we have not yet determined whether that program is going to include other components such as the retraining scholarship program or the resiliency grant program. And so that could change the total amount and how we want to go about setting a maximum if we do. So
can I make a suggestion, Whitney?
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're kind of, and I see you, Councilmember Barnidge. I feel like we're trying just to hit the gas pedal. So I'm going to hit the pedal, and that's, it's easier when we have a proposal than when we're dealing with a blank slate. So I'm just going to throw something out there that we make a decision for how much money we separately want to go to, if we choose in the majority to go to the retraining scholarship, because that's kind of a standalone thing and it has a finite number to each of the trainings. So I think Jocelyn can talk to us about that, but that's a number that's not unique to each applicant kind of thing. So that's going to be a number that we can give, that we wrap the COVID resiliency grant program into the business program, and then that's it. So that we carve out some for the retraining, and the rest of it goes to the combination of COVID resiliency and business assistance at the maximum amount we did last time, which is $5,000, and then let's go from there. So that's not a motion, but that's kind of just a proposed place to start. And Councilmember Barnidge, you wanted to speak too.
I like the idea of, I think that we're sort of maybe digging a little too deep, which I appreciate, but I think that for Jocelyn, as long as we kind of trust Jocelyn and the review panel, I think that depending on who comes in and applies for what, it's going to be really clear to the review panel, they really need this $5,000, and man, this $500 would really help this other, and it's going to be for different things, and I feel like we need to sort of let go. They kind of know what they're doing, and they work with businesses every day, and I like the $5,000 ceiling. I thought that anything more than that just seemed a little bit too much. Of course, I guess maybe there could be an instance, but I just felt like that would make the money go further if we had the $5,000. And I just think when we take out, I think we just kind of let them make the decisions, because we just don't know what people are going to come in with. So those are my comments for right now.
I'll jump in. Oh, go ahead, Jimmy.
Oh, I was just going to ask Jocelyn what her thought is on the scholarship program. How much would it take to be effective? You know, is $50,000 in that direction enough to implement an effective program, or would it take more? Do we have an idea of what, like, a minimum contract amount for SLO partners would be to provide that level of service? Any thoughts, Jocelyn?
Yes, thank you so much for asking that, and I'm sorry if I'm, like, jumping all over the place here, but from what I understand, Mike Spicula, who's the executive director of SLO Partners, is on our board, and from what I understand, they have a grant that has actually underwritten the program to bring the boot camp costs from $1,400 down to $400. So they could provide priority registration and scholarships for Arroyo Grande business employees or residents for $400 per boot camp, which is a really great starting point for the city. So if you wanted to base the scholarship number on $400, I'm confident that you could do that this evening, and then also plus the $1,700 to implement the program.
Thank you. Thank you, Jocelyn. So just looking at some basic math here, if we were to put $50,000 towards this, that would be at $400 per pop, 125 people that we could serve.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Jocelyn, let me ask a follow-up to that. How many people are they training on a monthly or annual, I mean, like, is 125 something that's achievable? That's, or is that too little? I mean, what's the capacity?
That's a great question. So the classes are ongoing, and so they are launching every month. And I don't want to only say that they have these technology classes and social media, or not social media, digital marketing boot camps. They've done several others. They've done precision manufacturing. They've done software coding. They are software developing, and they've also done classes for women who code, is what they've titled it. So they do a lot of different, depending on what the business needs are. So I know that they're ongoing, but I don't know the class size. And I would assume that because of COVID, a lot of things are online now, and they're done in the evening. So if a Rio Grande resident had a day job, or an employee, you know, was working at a company during the day, they could take these online during the evening. And I would assume, because of COVID and things being online, that the limits are expanded as far as participating online, but I don't know the exact number. But what I would say is that if we had 120 number and they didn't get into the first month, there's another class that starts the next month. So I think it would be easily accommodated.
How many are they training, like, already? Like, how many do they train in a month total?
So what I've heard is that they're currently have, I don't know the training numbers, but I know that they have currently placed over 200 people in local businesses. So I'm gonna.
Or how? What time period is that?
So that is, I believe those are 2020 numbers, but again, COVID is so hard to, you know. So I believe before COVID that the cohorts were limited to under 30 for a cohort, but I think because of COVID, now that they're doing things more online, there's more flexibility there. So there is a chance, especially if we are doing in-person training again, that a cohort could be limited to about a class of 30 or so. For one of the boot camps.
And Jocelyn, just a quick follow-up question. And I may have missed it, but you're saying that we think Slow Partners has the capacity to develop programs to meet, if we were to allocate the $50,000 to this, basically serve 125 of our residents and or businesses / employees.
That's correct. I've gotten that $400 number for them for scholarships, so I can confirm that, but I can't confirm which cohort they would be in, and if they would have to wait, they might have to wait, you know, a month or 2 months, maybe three at the most, to actually be in the program.
Okay. Just a quick comment, if I may, Mayor. Just looking at the math here, if we were to put $100,000 to the Small Business Assistance Program with the other program incorporated, with an average grant of $2,500, we would serve 40 businesses in the city of AG. With $50,000 to this particular scholarship program, we would potentially serve, because of the discounted amount, 125. So just thought I'd kind of throw that out for the council's consideration. Also happy to make a motion and see if it sticks, if it's appropriate.
Let's go around the table and kind of, because you've heard from me, although I didn't give too many numbers. You've heard from Councilmember Paulding now, or Mayor Pro Tem Paulding. Let's hear from Councilmember Storton and Councilmember Barnage about how, what they would divvy up the money.
Okay. I'll go ahead. 125 people seems a lot to me for some reason, but it's hard to tell exactly what the need is and if the isn't as great. I'd rather throw the money towards the business assistance grants because I feel like that's immediate and provides the need right away. So I'm kind of balancing between how much is the appropriate amount. I do appreciate just kind of leaving it open for the chamber to see how applications funnel in and have some flexibility in identifying the specific needs and where they fall and be able to use the money accordingly. But I feel going a little less on the scholarship program and putting more money towards the business assistance grants would be better. 40,000 would be 100 people. Maybe for consideration for the council too, I know we put the gap at 150,000. Maybe there's a way we retain another 50,000, and if we're successful, and this is reaching a lot of people, we can decide at a later time to apply more money in the appropriate place if we feel that that is necessary.
All of a sudden my sound just went dead. Can you guys hear me? Okay. So I kind of made comments after you did, Mayor, in the very beginning, so I don't have a lot to add. I also concur with Councilmember Storton, his comments that he just made. I would tend to almost echo exactly those. So hope that's helpful.
It is, and idea that if we allocate 40,000 to the business retraining program and the rest of it to the business assistance / COVID I can't remember all the names, but you know what I mean, grouping them that way, so it'd be 110 and 40, and then if that retraining program is wildly popular, I love the idea of revisiting spending some more of our economic development money for the the acronym, the other monies, to be able to support that, because we just don't know what the need is. So I think that's a pretty easy way to hedge our bets a little bit. And it's nice that I appreciate that we're talking about spending only 20% right now, and that we're going to begin to feel our way through this in the next few years of how to spend this effectively for Arroyo Grande. And so I like that too.
Just one question is, we do need to add in our administration costs and where that is going.
Oh, I forgot about that. Well, then maybe we would just do 154.7. Just to make it easy, I don't know.
Or can we take it from our ESMF funds? I don't know.
I think at this point, so if we have the total, 150,000, 40,000 for the retraining scholarship program, a larger kind of bucket of 110,000 from the SB 1090 funds for the business assistance grant program, which will include the COVID resiliency concept. To me, that those dollar amounts are a maximum, so that the chamber's costs would come off of those. In terms of staff time and administration time, that's actually not something that I had even proposed or thought through. Typically, it can range depending on the types of services that we're looking at. So, for instance, a private developer, if we're overseeing a contract, we might charge 10 to 15% administration overhead versus something, you know, I think we pay the county less than 3% on Lopez-related administration. So it really depends. I'm assuming that because this is all under the umbrella of economic development, that is a recoverable or a valid use of the SB 1090 money. But I believe, you know, because the chamber would be administering these programs, the cost to staff would be really just in the cutting checks side of things, and then just helping to support the review panel process, and same with the COVID safety program, that element. So if you'd like, I could, you know, if you'd like to provide direction as well, that you'd like us to consider kind of recouping some of that time, staff time and expense, certainly I would appreciate that. But I'm also open to something different, and we could maybe the direction maybe could include a max percentage or something like that. So that's just an option.
So I'm going to jump in and see if I can't move things along here. Number one, short version, I would not be in favor of that. We can suck it up, and I would rather have all this money go straight to economic development. I don't like seeing it shaved off for administration. It's one thing to ask the chamber to do it and to essentially contract out to do it. It's a whole other thing to be shaving it off as we do with some of the other ones. So I think that it would be a much better look to the community if we didn't do that. Mayor Pro Tem said he was ready to make a motion, and then he heard from the rest of the council. So I'm going to guess that he's going to make a motion that the whole council is going to support. So Mayor Pro Tem, if you're ready to, you said you were ready before. If you're not ready, I don't mean to put you on the spot. I just wanted to give you the open door since you said you were willing to walk through.
Well, I just had one more question for clarification. When we're talking about the $110,000, and any leftover monies, like when Councilmember Storton made his comment, it seemed like we would have flexibility built into that amount. And so I was wondering if that's, you know, if there are only X amount of businesses, 20 businesses that apply for grants, and anyway, we have leftover funds, how we accommodate that. And I don't know if we had address that. Would it roll, because are the funds in their entirety granted to the chamber to do that program, and we would need a reimbursement function? Or I guess another question would be to Jocelyn, do we think we have $110,000 worth of grant recipients waiting out there, or should we start by lowering that number in particular and then create a mechanism for adding to it?
Jumping in real quick, having served on that committee, that $60,000 went like that.
Okay, I think that answers the question.
So, Jocelyn, if you want to comment, please do. But I don't think we're going to have any shortage of people.
I concur.
Excellent. Well, I'd be happy to make a motion. I will move that this council direct $110,000 of our SB 1090 funds. Not out of the essential services fund, but the other fund, to the business assistance grant program, which shall include the COVID resiliency grant program in partnership with the Chamber of Commerce, including their fees in that amount as stated, as well as $40,000 to the scholarship program to be administered again through the chamber in partnership with SLO partners, including their fees.
I will second, but I want to ask for a couple of additions. Can we also direct that we do the COVID Superstar program? Okay. And even though it's no cost, I think we still need to direct that. And also that we do a media release that lets people know what we're doing. I'm pretty proud of what this council is about to do.
I would be happy to amend my motion to include the COVID Safety Superstar Program and media outreach. The question on whether we're going to include the utility bill concept was open. I don't know if we need to have that included in the motion or not. Seeing thumbs down, it is not included.
That was just mine. We still got two others.
What was the question, Jimmy, about the utility bill?
If we were going to include some level of broader level city outreach through the utility bill mechanism, I think the mayor had mentioned we could theoretically advertise all of these programs through that, but it would take 2 months. It would require additional staff cost and time. I think we could probably trust the chamber to do robust outreach, as the mayor mentioned. And so it is not included in my motion at this time.
Okay, and then I actually wanted to bring that up earlier, that a lot of people pay their bill online, so they wouldn't get the insert. So, I agree, not adding it in.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Do we have any more discussion that we'd like to have? Okay, City Clerk Mattson, can we get a roll call, please?
Okay, if you don't mind, I'm going to restate the motion, just so we're clear for the record. They have 110,000 out of SB 1090 funds to the Business Assistant Grant Program, including the COVID Resiliency Program in partnership with the Chamber, and then 40,000 out of SB 1090 funds to the Scholarship Fund in partnership with the Chamber, and including the COVID Superstar Program with outreach done by the Chamber.
Do we need to delineate that the fees for the Chamber are included in those amounts?
Okay.
And then
I can
Mayor Pro Tem, you had your finger up.
I was going to say the same thing. I would include that in my motion. Thank you.
Okay. With that, Mayor Pro Tem Holding?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Ressam?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
And Councilmember George is absent.
Dang, that feels good, doesn't it? Man, we get to be Santa Claus twice. And for all the not fun that we've had as a city administering so much not fun regulation over the last year, that just feels so dang good. Now, one thing we did not deal with, so I'm not going to move forward yet, is who's going to serve on that subcommittee. What I would like to propose, and I know Jocelyn's still here, it doesn't have to be part of our motion. I really want every council member to get a chance to serve, and if we just do one piece of it, then only two council members get to do it, and one council member gets left out. And so, Jocelyn, can you unmute and just see, let me know if there's some way that you think we might be able to either do it in two pieces, or do we really need to just keep it to two council members and let you all draw straws? I don't know what that looks like. How do you propose we might be able to be inclusive?
Well, I would say with this many components to the program that it's probably not going to be done in one meeting by the review panel, so I think that we could probably, and I think that's a really good way to do it actually, to build in some redundancies and accountability. So I would like to suggest that because it's a more robust program, there's more funds being expended and there's more components to it, that it's probably going to take more than one meeting, maybe two or three, and that we can absolutely include multiple council members in that.
Okay, well then, I don't know if we need to, I think it's probably good to at least have some direction going forward for the first round, and Mayor Pro Tem said he wanted to participate. Councilmember Storton or Barnidge, do either of you want to participate on the first round or yield to the other?
I'll go ahead and yield to the to Councilmember Storton.
I guess that's a yes for me.
All right, and then when the future rounds come around, we can rotate accordingly. So I just want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to participate. It was so much fun the first time around. All right, then that concludes item 10A. So we are at item 11, new business. We have none. So that takes us to city council reports. And I am first. So for CJPIA, that's July. South Sand District. I was unable to make that meeting, and Councilmember George was the one who attended on my behalf. So she is clearly not here to be able to do that report. So she/I will report out next time for that. I did go over the agenda. And the main discussion item, other than just the routine stuff that we do, was about going forward with adding that onto the tax rolls as it's done in Oceano as well. And I don't know, it was just a point in time discussion of where the discussion was going. So it was discussion about a discussion, so there was no vote on it. So more will be forthcoming on that anyway. For the TBID, I was there, and in all honesty, that was several weeks ago, and I can't remember anything significant from that, but I do remember that one thing that is coming that did not happen at that meeting but is significant is when we reformed that board, when I came back on the council, you might remember, I know Councilmember Barnett remembers, we had some, I don't know how to explain the issues that were with that group, but we kind of took control of it and revamped it, and there was a lot of work to be done. We had a marketing agency that was a subpar, and I think we're far enough away from that I can say that now. So we were meeting on a monthly basis, and that was always meant to be temporary. So when we redid the bylaws, we redid them to do them month by month, and now there may be a proposal to go back to quarterly as necessary, because things really are running really smoothly. And I joke when I say I don't really remember the last meeting, because it's always the same, which is, it's a good thing. We review the financials and we take a look at the marketing report, and it's always interesting, but there hasn't been any big decisions that have been made recently, and that's the reason that we may change the meeting schedule going forward. And that's a very good indication to this council that it's been 5 years now and it really is running smoothly. And so credit to the TBID, credit to the chamber, and so it's all going well. And with that, I will turn it over to Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate that report. Just going down the list here, the Air Pollution Control District Board has not met recently. Neither has the Briscoe Halcyon Interchange Subcommittee. Regional Transit Authority did meet on the 3rd. Our regional bus maintenance facility construction project is underway. Things are going pretty well. A few weather impacts, but nothing that can't be mitigated. And then just in general, we're experiencing operational challenges due to the social distancing requirements on the buses, as well as the associated occupancy limits. Happy to share any more information on that, but we have good leadership from our executive director and staff working through those issues. And then the Slo Council of Governments has not met recently, the South County Transit was absorbed into Regional Transit. So that is my entire report. Thank you.
Councilmember Barnett.
Thank you. I do not have a report because no one has met. We meet, HSOC meets next week. Thank you.
Councilmember Starton.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a couple things to report. Regarding the Five Cities Fire Authority, not much to report on our meetings, but I do want to give a kudos and thank you to Chief Lieberman and his staff for their incident management and logistical support at our vaccination sites. They were in charge of that for a while, but now the county EOC is taking over, but really appreciate the work locally that has been done to keep that up and going. As far as the IWMA, we've hit some challenges. In a recent, last month, we voted, where I was on the losing side of a vote of a 7-6 vote to rescind our polystyrene ordinance that was actually put into place and voted on by a majority in October of 2019. Since that time, some discussions have taken place as to the direction of the IWMA, and the majority feels that we should stay that are issued by the state. The polystyrene ordinance is not a state mandate. It's a local ordinance that was crafted to impact our county. Tomorrow we'll have a meeting, and we will, in order to get rid of an ordinance, you have to create an ordinance to get rid of the old ordinance. So tomorrow we will have that discussion. I imagine there will be a lot of public involvement and discussion at the board level as to what will happen with that moving forward. I don't know if you recall, but we did adopt that ordinance by our council after it was passed through the IWMA, so we'll have to see how that progresses. The South County Chamber of Commerce, Government Affairs Committee, Dan Carl, the director of the Coastal Commission, spoke to our group and talked about some of the concerns moving forward with some of what the Coastal Commission is thinking as far as the vision of Oceano and the Dunes and the recreational area, as well as the master plan that was put together by the county, by Parks. So there's some, as we know, a lot of conversation going on in that area. I won't get into the details, but he just kind of gave a perspective from the Coastal Commission. And that's all I had to report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we'll hear from Councilmember George next time, because I believe council reports are on the next agenda anyway, because this one is delayed. So that takes us to item 13, council communications. So as always, just as a nod for fun, I go to Councilmember Bornich. Do you have anything tonight, Kristen?
Nope, I don't think I do.
Pigs are flying in Arroyo Grande. Councilmember Storton, anything to share?
I don't, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem?
I have one item. I'll try to keep it brief. It's actually a related item. Councilmember Storton was just talking about the Oceano Dunes, and I have no intent to agendize anything for our council related to that. But I did receive an email from Jocelyn, and hopefully she's still watching our meeting, with regard to an economic impact assessment that Visit SoCal is wanting to perform. I don't know if everybody else received that related to that issue. And I just thought it would be most appropriate if, because funds are being sought from each of the local jurisdictions to help fund that regional study, that the TBID could be a source of funding for that, as that directly relates to regional tourism. And was just wondering if that's something, I guess this would be a question for staff, if we would need to agendize direction to TBID to do that, or if that's something they could just decide to bring before their board as part of their purview.
As the sitting rep on TBID, typically the way we spend those funds is directly related to heads in beds. That's the saying. That doesn't mean that we can't spend monies, but there is a directive, and that's meant to be directly benefiting the hospitality industry, not necessarily tourism, but hospitality. But I will let Jocelyn, if she, I see that she's still here. Jocelyn, do you have anything on that? I see her ready.
Hi, Council. Yes, that is, so just to give a little bit of context to what Councilmember Paulding stated, is that we are commissioning a economic impact assessment related to the Oceana Dunes Park, and what is unfortunate about the situation there is that there hasn't really been a recent study to say what does that bring to our region, which would include Arroyo Grande, who stays in the hotels, who spends money at the restaurants, you know, who's shopping. There's really not anything definitive that anyone can agree on. There's conflicting reports, and none of them are current. So SoCal and the Chamber are commissioning a study, and we are asking for buy-in from each of the South County cities, which includes Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, and Grover Beach, and then also from the county, because we believe it's important for this report to be unified from all the stakeholders that are invested in the tourism that that brings or doesn't bring. So we are asking for the city of Arroyo Grande to sign on as a signatory to commission that study, and also for some financial investment. The suggested amount is $5,000. And if it were to come from the TBID, which does make sense because this is going to be very valuable information that's going to inform tourism, it would have to be a budget adjustment to the TBID, and I think they would have to vote on that and adjust their budget, or they could allocate it in the 2021-22 budget. SoCal is looking for a commitment from the city, and they will follow up later with the financials on it, but we want to get the RFP out as soon as possible because the Coastal Commission will be making this decision on March 18th, as far as we know, and so, of course, it won't be done by then, but it is a time-sensitive manner, so I know this isn't agendized, and I'm probably over speaking on the topic, but I just wanted to give a little bit of since I was asked, a little bit of context to the question.
The question, Jocelyn, was how would the TBID go about doing it? So I know we have that application that we take for being able to grant money. Is that the mechanism that we would use?
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but that could be a mechanism that could be used. So that is an application that is live now, and if you know, if SoCal were to apply for it, as they are a nonprofit, they could apply for it this month, and then it would be decided on at our April meeting, and a recommendation from the TVID would be provided to the council.
Thank you, Jocelyn. I appreciate that clarification. It sounds like there's a path. I know that we're, you know, we can't really discuss this more, so that answers my question. I appreciate that response.
City Manager McDonald, did you have something you wanted to add? You lit up.
Only that I think the concept of whether the city is going to support the effort, even the financial component, as kind of a secondary issue as well. This is something that if the council as a whole wants to kind of sign on to the idea, we should bring that forward as a discussion item for council, or maybe even a consent agenda item, just to support the concept. And then the funding itself, even if it comes through the TBID with the recommendation to fund through the TBID, then that adjustment, as Jocelyn mentioned, they would recommend that, and we would need to make that adjustment at the council level. But that could all happen later. It sounds like they're just looking for that initial support concept. But unfortunately, I think we would need to put that on the agenda in the future in order to give that, you know, formal thumbs up from the city.
Wendy, does the TBID have the ability to allocate funds within their existing budget that doesn't require council approval? Because there is a mechanism at the TBID where, you know, for example, when we had the baseball championships 2 years ago, and some, you know, we created that application process so that there is money in the budget available for those kinds of things. I get the political sensitivity here, and I think you're right on that. And I balked at first, too, which is why I was kind of pushing a little bit. But at the same time, I do think there's a mechanism that already exists. So how do we instruct that, if we want to do that, how do we instruct the TBID that we want that coming up? And I see Mr. Hirsch here, so I understand. Just shut up.
So I
have said, David.
Yeah, in one of my cities previously, the city manager would always look at me and say, David's getting nervous.
All right, so David's nervous. We'll another time. Yes.
I'd be happy to ask if there's a second, you know, just to support a future agenda item related to that specific topic, if that's being deemed necessary by our city manager. And then if there's no second, then it goes away. I just wanted to be sensitive to the timeline and the request by Jocelyn, that's all. Is there a second?
Burnage?
What?
Oh, you were unmuted, so I thought you wanted to talk.
I was unmuted because I was on edge during the whole conversation, because I knew we were like way outside the, to me, at what we were supposed to be talking about. So I was like ready to jump in, but then David popped.
I'm hesitating on the second, and I think it's probably best to leave it in the hands of the city manager right now, because we're skirting that line so finely.
I think I understand from here, and so unless there's anything else on that particular direction, then I think I'm good on my side.
Thank you. I do have a couple things as well. First of all, I guess I don't have to talk about the Letters Homeless Coalition, because we kind of achieved that end earlier today, so that worked out. I wanted to let everybody know that the League of Cities is doing a monthly speaker series, and I quite frankly talked to Dave and said, dude, monthly now? Just because we can do it by Zoom doesn't mean we need now a monthly meeting. And that was kind of in jest, but kind of not. And we started talking about the upcoming speakers, and I wanted to let the council know that it's not inked yet, but the intended April speaker series is the guy from Cosmont that we heard at League of Cities that first year in early 2019,
think that old slide went, economic development, blah, and our heads just exploded with ideas. So he's coming up on the agenda. So I wanted to let you know, I don't know if they've inked the date yet, but Dave asked me, hey, is there anybody you'd like to, that you'd actually show up for in the speaker series? And I said, how about that guy that we saw at that time, and I couldn't remember his name, and then I went and looked it up, and he said, oh, yeah, he's our one we're trying to nail right now. So I just want to let you know that that's coming. So it might be really worth going to that one. And secondly, it was a surprise last year, but this year I am reprising the banner project for the class of 2021. So that is, the fundraising is underway. And so I want to let both the public and this council know that we are taking sponsorship donations of any amount. So $1 up to the sky's the limit. The goal is $10,000. And we have so far raised just shy of $3,000. And I certainly want to encourage the council that you could sponsor a banner. And at the $200 level, your name goes on what the banner of your choice. It says presented by Russum or whatever. And you can just simply. And there is a Facebook page called 2021 Banner Project for Aurora County High School. And this year, we're also devoting some of the banners to Lopez High School. So there will be blue and gold everywhere with a little sprinkle of crimson. So very excited. Please help me get that word out so that we can... sorry, I'm getting a message that my internet is bad. But so if you go out to the parents and the community, it's very difficult to get the word out right now because we're still great, and it should happen again in the 3 weeks before graduation, so going up in May, right about the time we all need a colorful lift and extending through graduation. We will auction off the banners at the end to benefit all the clubs afterwards as well. So, with that, no closed session tonight, so that takes us to item 15, adjournment. We'll see y'all in a couple of weeks. No, 3 weeks. We have a fifth Tuesday this month.
Good night.
Good night.